This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
I see here you have quite the layout, the list of what we're going to talk about.
Well, I didn't know if where the conversations might lead, and
yeah.
I just thought I'd let you see what I was ruminating about all week.
Yeah, wow, it's so funny. For everybody listening, we've already hit record. We've been chatting for a minute or two here, and this is Kevin Anders, correct?
Anderson.
Yep. Anderson. How did I get Anders?
No, Anders that's my YouTube or my Yahoo address.
See, all right. So yep. I'm not crazy. I wasn't wrong. All right, I got Kevin Anderson. Nice to meet you. You've got ups. Let me open with that. You got some ups, right? People don't know what the heck I'm talking about. Your SBS photo.
Oh yeah. I got some street cred with that a little bit.
Yeah, but no, I'm going ups. You got some elevation there.
I was a high jumper in high school. Yeah, oh, I went to states.
Really? Yeah. All right. Wow. Yeah. So I mean, it's like, I'm not kidding. I'll tweet out that picture if that's okay. That's a great picture.
Oh, please do.
I love that. You sent me, let's open with that one, because I think that's a cool picture. You got some speaker. Just because you took the picture, you tell the story. It's your story.
Yeah. So what's awesome, this SVS, back in 2007 when I went there, they were still a small company. They hadn't, exploded like they would eventually. And they were real close to where my parents live. They live in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. north of Pittsburgh. And SVS is just outside of Youngstown, Ohio. I think they've got a Youngstown, Ohio address. But I went there, and the place is like a house. It's a person's home that they just converted. And it's just this unassuming little place. And I'm like, this is where all the bass is coming from.
this is the whole
everybody
base,
on the internet.
B-A-S-E of the bass. Yep. B-A-S-S. All right, cool.
Yeah, so I just went there because they were near my house. And I had recommended them to a friend of mine who was doing a system at his house. And I recommended their cylinder sub. And so when I took that picture, put it on AVS Forum, Ed Mullins reached out to me, asked if I'd be willing to let them use it in their newsletter.
Yeah.
And I said yes. And he said, awesome. Hey, as a thank you, could we give you a set of our bookshelf speakers? I said, absolutely. And things got a little awkward because he reached out to me again and said, hey, I can't find your name and address in our customer base. What did you buy from us? And I had to tell him nothing. I had just gone there and I had spoken to the engineers and stuff there. Oh. And like I say, I'm the one who got my friend to buy their cylinder stub. He had never heard anything about it. So I did rectify this whole thing a few years ago, I think 2015, 2016. I got the SVS Ultra bookshelves. So I finally paid proper homage.
Oh, nice.
To SBS.
Yeah. Yeah, but they can't be upset. You're recommending them, and you hadn't even bought anything. You just, So I mean, you are promoting the brand. So that and your picture was fantastic. So I mean, that I think they got their money's worth. So
that's
awesome. That's so the tour was really cool though. Checking that place out and everything.
It wasn't. it wasn't much of a tour.
Right.
It was a showroom where they just, walked me through the different product listings. I didn't get to see, I know they've got a warehouse that I don't know if they build in that warehouse or used to build in that warehouse.
Yeah.
They didn't take me back there. I didn't get the behind the scenes, kind of look, but, at the time, I still have it. I've got a 15-inch Advent subwoofer that I got back in 98, 99. And it's Advent, but it says with Bob Carver Sunfire Technology. And I asked the guy there, I said, "Hey, do you know what the heck this Bob Carver Sunfire Technology is?" He said, "Yes, there were a number of companies that in the 90s, Bob Carver's company kind of, I won't say sued them, but there was some potential litigation that if you had a powered sub that exhibited certain features,"
yeah,
"that he said that those were his license. You needed to license them from him. So it had nothing to do with the Bob Carver Sunfire, the company, but they use that to get his name on there." I thought that was interesting. All that stuff happens.
This is what I hate to say, stuff like this, like, just this is what's fun about having different guests on, different people on, because you ever heard the term like, "Oh, you'll never, that person such and such will has forgotten more about whatever subject than you'll ever know." Right?
Yeah.
You just saying Bob Carver, Sunfire, and that whole thing, it's like memories are coming back. I can't put it all together, but I'm like, I remember all of that. I remember like reading about it, reading about Bob Carver, reading about Sunfire, reading about that whole thing. And you're like, I'm just like, I'd forgotten all about that until you just said it. And I'm like, wow, it's funny how things just get, like, memories get sparked, like, oh yeah, that's somewhere in my head. It's all of that stuff. And you're like, crazy.
Yeah.
But let's get into a little bit of how you got started into home theater.
Yeah. My older brother, was friends with a guy who worked at a local, stereo shop, and he introduced me to the name Onkyo, which I had never heard of that before. You know,
it's a weird name.
Growing up in the 80s, I knew about Pioneer, Sony, JVC, Kenwood, all the standards of that day. So when I heard Onkyo, I thought, well, this has to be the pinnacle of audio. This is like high end stuff. So I went to a shop that sold them. And he talked me into this setup. I wouldn't buy the speakers from him because everything he was selling was, what I could afford was too small. I was like, I can't pay $300 for a pair of speakers that small. This is in the 80s.
Really?
That was just, So I put this whole Onkyo system together, and I couldn't play anything out of it until I found some speakers. So I went on to this, at the time, it was just mail order catalog, DBX Soundfield 5s. And these speakers, for a guy like me who's into, you know, the exotic materials, technology, you know, these things, it had five drivers. Two of them were up firing. It had an aluminum ribbon tweeter, and the woofer was a 15-inch monster.
Oh, yeah.
The mid was a transparent plastic of some kind, but these things just looked awesome, and you could adjust. There was an attenuator for the up firing speakers, but they just sounded terrible. And that was, and for years I thought, oh, it's the room. It's, I don't have enough amplification. But house after house, I moved multiple times and I'm changing all the equipment and the speakers never sounded any good. And so that was a, you know, it was eye-opening. You know, I experienced it and I understood, you know, it's the real engineering that goes into it. So you can't just judge it by its looks, by how big the thing
go
is
figure.
And all that. So, yeah.
It's funny. I use this phrase. I use this all the time. I've probably said it on the podcast, but I raised my kids on the idea that, and this plays into everything in life, but it's also a good way to, I can't think, to bring yourself down a notch. And everybody knows, like, kids look at their parents, like, you know, for a certain amount of their time, like gods, right? Like, oh, wow, you guys are just, you're so smart. And they're like, oh, dad, because that's how I looked at my parents, right? So I, and you look and you're like, my, and you still do, you get to a point in your life where you look at your parents like, ah, you don't know anything. And then you get to a point in your life, wow, they knew a lot more than I thought they knew. Right. So, but I always said to my kids, like, look, you learn from your mistakes, right? Like you and that speaker set, it's like, you learn from your mistakes. Well, and I always said to my kids, like, you know what? You think I'm smart? I'm like, yeah, Dad, you're really smart. I'm like, yeah, and I'm an idiot. I've made a lot of mistakes. So somebody that, and I always said to him, somebody that you think is smart has probably made a lot of mistakes. So don't be afraid to make mistakes. And that's what's fun about home theater. Like, do you know how much crap we've been through and how much stuff that we've listened to that was bad and we found out why? And it was over years of time that you're like, you know what? It's like, and like you just said, don't judge a book by its cover. Don't go by the looks, especially on something that's supposed to sound good. Now that's where you get into some great speakers where the marriage of looking fantastic and sounding fantastic, that's, I mean, that's where the money is, right? That's what you're paying for. And it's like, you can have a great looking speaker, or you can have a great sounding speaker, or you could pay twice the money and have both. And it's, it really is. It's, and it sounds like just talking to you through the emails and stuff, it sounds like you are, you're like, you're big into sound and big into music and all of that. Right. So that's yet another listener. That's, I'm not. And I like your, I'll let you say it, number three on the list, your credo number one. I like that. And I'll have to say, I don't know the difference. So why don't you go into that?
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'll admit it. I like I guess I like music.
Yeah. Well, my credo is, some people love music. Some people love the sound of music. And if you don't know the difference, then you just like music.
Yeah.
So some people, they've got a style that they love and they want to hear that style. Other people, they put more emphasis on the quality of the recording, the hearing the instruments, that they can appreciate any style of music if it's recorded well and it brings you. I love music that makes me feel like the artist is right there in the room with me. I can appreciate the sound of a heavy distortion guitar, you know, the energy of that. But I would much prefer a like an acoustic unplugged set of music that just makes you feel like the band's right there in the room with you.
It's, see, I like I like hearing the sounds. I love hearing, being able to hear, like on like you said, on a guitar, an acoustic guitar, I love to be able to hear, like, say the fingers slide down the strings, when you can hear that and feel that. And it's like, when you hear it, just the textures, almost like you could feel the texture of the string as the fingers are sliding down, or the plucking where you can hear that little bit. And it doesn't have to be any particular type of music, but I love the idea of the technology that goes in to being able to duplicate that and be able to sit there and listen to it. You could actually send me like a file of, here, just listen to this, and it'll be like three notes, but it's the way the hands slide and the pluck of the string. And now whether that's a pluck with a pick or a pluck with a finger, you'd be able to, you could feel it without seeing anything. It's not a video. This is just be able to feel it and to be able to duplicate that sound. And I'm trying to think of what I've heard something that I'm literally remembering it in my head as I speak to you right now. And I'm like, I know that sound, and I know the almost like, and even in my memory right now, like I could feel his fingerprints on the, you know what I mean? Like you just feel that. And like the fact that we have the technology to duplicate something that is in my memory, it's so clear, so vivid, that's the fun to me. So it's not necessarily that that recording that's awesome to me, or like you said, like the style of music that you do like, but you can appreciate all those other things, that the stuff, all the other sounds, so you appreciate that music. To me, it's that's that realistic artist in me that's like, wow, we have some technology that can actually duplicate this to make you feel like you're sitting right there. That's the fun to me. It's the tech. And that's what I've always liked about music, and like listening to, getting into a style is like a Van Halen, and the drums go, and then Eddie's guitar on one side, and then, and listening and sitting in headphones, right? And sitting there and feeling like it's all around you. And this is stuff going into the 80s. And it's like, that's the fun stuff to me. And that, but it was that marriage of art and technology for me is what really was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I, growing up, my mom was a music teacher. She played piano. And so you'd think I'd be surrounded by music all the time. She never turned on the radio, didn't have tapes, records, nothing. And my dad, he had multiple Bose Wave radios. He just listened to talk radio on them. So, and he just had an AM radio in this van.
Larry Glick never sounded better.
And so I was so alone in this house that I should have been feeding this this musical thirst, but I got no help from my parents in that respect. Yeah.
So, do you think that helped or hurt you in your in where you are now with music and home theater and stuff?
Well, my mom. It was because of my mom that I was in just about every choir you could think of, just about every band, concert band, marching, jazz. And I took piano as a kid. I was in the guild. And so I took music theory literally from a nun. So wow. I have this background of appreciation for music that I think it helps me to understand the complexity of music, to, mm-hmm. to appreciate, what it is that makes some music sound better than other music, But I'm not a good musician. And that hurts me, that I love music so much, but I know I'm a mediocre musician. And so I can appreciate those who can play like a guitar. I can't play guitar at all, but it gives me great appreciation for those who can. You just pick it up and start strumming. Yeah,
but so why does it, it's fascinating to me that, stuff like that, like it hurts you that you can't, that you're not a good musician. That was your phrase, right? You said it hurts that you're not a good musician. When in actuality, I think it helps you as a person. It helps you appreciate it, because I've never tried to play an instrument. I think I appreciate a good musician, but in actuality, I can't appreciate it on the level that you can, because I've never tried to play guitar. So I don't know how difficult it is. I know it's difficult because I hear about it, right? But I don't have the same appreciation you do for having tried it and been like, I can't even pull that off, and look at what that guy can do, right? But by the same token, the reason I can understand that, and I can actually say, like, I get what you're saying, but at the same, like, I play hockey, right? Mm-hmm. And I love hockey. I'm a decent hockey player, but I could never play in the pros ever. Mm-hmm. Right. But I can so when I see what a pro can do, I can appreciate it in a way that somebody that's never played the game, and they're like if you go to a pro hockey game and everybody in the crowd's yelling, shoot, shoot. Nah, you have no idea what they're talking about, because you don't know, like, you don't just shoot the puck. It's not like you get into the zone. It's like, but somebody that appreciates it goes, wow, what he just pulled off there. You have no idea what it takes for your body to be able to twist, blah, 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 and do all this stuff. Right. But yep. I'm not hurt that I can't duplicate what that guy can do. You know, I think it makes me appreciate that. It makes me appreciate what they do even better, which I don't know. It's I don't think you should be hurt at all. I think you should be like, hey, I can appreciate it on a level that some people can't. And that's not bad that they can't. I mean, I don't think it's any worse that I can't to your level, but it's all just who we are, right?
Well, maybe I didn't use strong enough words when I said mediocre. Like, you say you're not a great a hockey player, but you can skate. You could skate around the rink. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
With or without a stick. I'm talking about, imagine somebody who really wants to play hockey, but they can't get 20 feet out on the ice without falling.
Right.
And they couldn't hit the puck with a stick. That's how badly I play instruments. And so it's something that I love so much that I don't feel I can participate in, let alone excel in it. I don't feel I can participate. But I do other things. I'm learning right now to be a DJ. My niece is getting married in a few months. And so I bought all this equipment. Some might say it was an excuse to buy all this equipment. I got a couple of heavy duty amplifiers.
Whatever it takes to make the excuse, right?
Yeah. I've run the soundboards at several churches before, so I've done things related to music and live performance that I feel I'm participating, even though it's not up on the stage.
That's good. I mean, that's the thing. It's you find what you can do, and that's I'm not going to argue with you, but I still think you shouldn't feel bad, because it's like, that's the thing. If you try, you fail, but you're like, but you'll find your way, you know, you'll find something that out of that passion, you find your way, you know? And it's like, I mean, just look at this, you know, it's, I spent most of my life looking to talk to people about home theater, and eventually I never knew how to podcast. I started doing, and next thing you know, now I'm talking to people all over the world and great people like yourself. And you're like, here we go. It works out. Right. And it's like, it's, if you have a passion, you'll find your way. It's like a river, right? It'll make its way through. It's like, that's the way it goes. So that's good though. So what I really like is, now my wife was really into music growing up. She played the violin. She was in orchestra. She understands that. She was good. And I love when she comes down and watches a movie with me, and then she points out where different pieces in the orchestra are in the room. And it's just, that to me is fascinating. That's, this is where I'm going to say something similar to you. I wish I knew that stuff. And everybody says stuff like that, but at the same time, well, if I really wished it, I'd do it. But to know, I don't know a C note from an A, whatever they are. I don't know that stuff. I don't, but she could pick out an instrument. And what's fun in my room in a theater is like, she could pick out an instrument and tell me where it is in the room too. Which is really cool. Like, oh, the cello's over there. I'm like, that's a cello? I'm like, okay, I'll take your word for it. But can you do that too? Can you, like, pick instruments out and know all that stuff? And what, if you can, what are some of the movies you like that, like, really emphasize that for you?
No, I can't. No.
Oh, you can't? You can't? Oh.
No. I've never deep dived into orchestral, I should know, because I was in multiple bands, that I should know where the different parts of the orchestra sit.
Right.
But I never paid attention to it. Even when I was there in school, it just wasn't something that I paid attention to. And, you know, one of the things that I regret, that I just... just went along with it. It's not something that I pursued actively back then. My mom wanted me to be in these things, so I participated in them. but it wasn't my passion.
It sounds like you were more like me. Just, you were the marriage of the sounds and the technology. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Which is where we go back to your set of speakers that were your first marriage of sound technology didn't go well. It was like, I like the way it looks. I mean, that idea that you had, like, just knowing what we know now, the idea of a speaker having the attenuator on for the up firing, you're like, wow, that can't go well. But at the time, it's a gadget. Gotta have it. Right.
Yeah. And it predated surround sound. You know, this is these speakers came out in the late 80s, before surround sound was really a thing. And so I think it was a way to add a little more spaciousness to a two channel setup.
Right.
Yeah, but so that was a bad call on my part, trying to, you know, get those speakers thinking that they were better than a small pair. But it's funny, for subwoofers, there is no replacement for displacement, right? The subwoofer, it either needs to be really big, or it needs to have a lot of power for more excursion. But I wanted to mention, my uncle had a Bose system, and this is back, you know, before I was looking things up on the internet about sound, you know, maybe 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at his place, and I'm so excited, you know, because he always had Sansui and, you know, interesting electronics there. So he gets this Bose system, and I can't wait to watch a movie on it. And I sit down right in the middle, so I'm dead on to the screen. And within the first 5 minutes, I couldn't stand what I was listening to. Uh-oh. I said, all the bass is coming from one side. The sound is so lopsided. What the heck is going on? And it wasn't for like another 2 years before I would realize that bass module was playing sounds well above the omnidirectional threshold. And I'm hearing mid bass coming from the corner where that subwoofer, where that woofer, that bass module was placed. And there's a rational scientific reason of why I hated that guy's setup. I didn't know it at the time,
right?
But that kind of, that made me feel good that I had detected it and made a judgment call that I didn't know why, but there was scientific method behind it.
And isn't that fun when something pans out to, like, you were like, that didn't sound right, and whether it's right or wrong, when you see something, and I call it, that's like the kind of the blind test where you're like, you didn't know what it was, but you knew one way or the other, like, that looked really good, but I don't know why. And then you find out why later, or vice versa in your situation, where you're like, that sounded really bad. But then you find out, you're like, oh my God. It's like, I thought when you started on that story, I thought you were going to say that he'd set the room up wrong. Cause the way you said, I'm sitting dead center. And I thought he had like the LCRs mounted to the right side of the room. Facing
yeah. Wasn't I was that
like,
bad.
Oh no. Yeah. Like, that's where I thought you were going. But, but I had a three channel. I can't even remember what it was called, but I had the Bose system. That was what I had right before I got my NHTs. And that was the demonstration that I was like, holy crap, what a difference, how much nicer it was. The buddy at the Laserdisc store said, bring in your Bose system. We'll set it up here after hours and we'll put on some demo scenes. And, I was like, holy crap, what a difference. And I'm like, and the difference in price at the time too was huge, because the Bose system was fairly expensive and a set of three NHTs across the front were fair at that time to me. I think they were like $100 a piece, $125 a piece, which in the mid 90s was still a lot for me. I wasn't making a lot of money, but I was like, wow, that was still cheaper than the Bose system, which I'd saved up for a long time. But I forget, did the Bose system have a crossover where you could change? I don't even remember. I don't think so, because they're so proprietary. Yeah, I think it was all plug and play and don't touch a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. Yeah. But it's a great learning. Like you said, it's a great learning experience, you know, and
Now I've got a more recent example of me knowing better, but still doing the wrong thing on purpose, just to experience it.
Oh, just to experience it. I know better, but what the heck? I'm jumping off this cliff.
Well, the company Acoustic Research, now that's the names, the rights to the name have been bought. It was bought by Rikuten, and so who knows who owns them right now. But at the time, Acoustic Research was, I won't say a respected name in audio at that time, but one of the founders was Kerry Christie, who he actually founded Infinity with some, I think, Henry Kloss and some other big names. But Kerry Christie wanted a signature speaker to mount to the wall with these new plasma TVs that came out in the late 90s. So he had these speakers called the Phantoms that were extruded aluminum, exotic, here's me with the exotic materials again, carbon fiber, woven carbon fiber woofers, neodymium magnets that were on the outside of the driver that allowed them to be so shallow. These things were only 3.5 inches deep with an 8-inch woofer. And then they had it was a three-way speaker. So it's a mag alloy tweeter. And I forget if there was anything special about the mid-range. Anyways, these speakers were beautiful. And I said, what if I put one on top of the other, mounted on the wall, Would that be kind of like a line array speaker? Because line array speakers, they're
right,
you know, 8 feet tall and you know, dozens of drivers. Well, I wrote to Tom and Rob about it, and they said, yeah, it's nothing like a line array at all. Here's why. And here's why what you're doing is not going to work. But I said, hey, I got all these speakers because I've loved these speakers since they first came out. I've been buying them since like 2004. And I have sold houses that had seven of them mounted around the walls. So, and I just, I went through a phase where I was buying them off eBay like crazy. So I got a ton of them. So I put on the, for the left and right speakers, I stacked them vertically. And for the center channel, I put them horizontally next to each other. And you've probably heard Tom rail against, Axiom had a, center channel with multiple tweeters. Yeah. And I proved it's bad news. It's wrong. Don't do it. Because it creates, I mean, they've mentioned comb filtering, and I heard it for myself. The constructive and destructive interference is real. And you move your head just a little bit, and you hear it come and go. And so it was perfectly demonstrated in that. So the center channels, I ripped out of there, replaced them with a RBH impression center channel.
There you go.
And never looked back.
So although you go from absolutely like wrong setup to like not just at zero. If zero is even, you were like way in the negative, and then you went to something that was like people like that could be my end game speaker.
Yeah.
But, not just getting back to zero. Like I consider my NHTs like nice, neutral, right. No big mistakes. They're nothing flashy, but you went from like, wow, just I don't even do that to, wow, I hope to get that someday.
Now I still have the vertical stacked speakers on the sides. That has worked out for me. And what I did, the tweeters, I took the tweeters off and I created like 20 degree wedges for them on the lower speakers. Yep. So they're not truly aligned. It's as though I've got two sets of speakers and one set of tweeters is towed in. Okay. And that's really worked out. I've not experienced anything negative from that. And the amount of headroom it gives you to double the number of speakers.
Right.
I love it. And I've tried it with just one set of speakers or the other, because it's real easy to just unplug when you've got two sets of wires. And I enjoy the larger sound of having the two sets.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah.
But see, that's it's so funny. You learn so much from just, you know what? Somebody told me this isn't going to work, but I'm going to try it anyways. Or I don't like this. Or I have no idea. I was literally just having this conversation with my son today. He's an engineer, and he's got a little bit of an artistic, and when I say a little bit, he's my son, so I'm trying to be nice. He's got a little bit of an artistic mind, and he's like, my best friend in high school was very much like him, an engineer, same thing. Went to WPI, got a job in engineering. That's my best friend in high school. And it's like, and we used to have the most incredible discussions, to me anyways, because I have that little bit of an engineer mind, but I'm super creative in that way, right? Compared to an engineer. So we were having a discussion today about a physics topic, and he's like, no, that's impossible. I go, see, you're wrong. I go, you just think it's impossible because of, he goes, no, that this, and then I said to him, I won't get into what the discussion was, but I go, but what if we could do this, this, and this? And he goes, well, then that would be possible. I'm like, there you go. And that's, he goes, but that's not possible. But I just said, what if we could do this? And like, we were talking about a technology that exists right now that we've already improved that 50 years ago we didn't think would be possible, right? Mm-hmm. I go, look, actually it's older than that technology. But anyways, I go, look, with not even in our lifetimes, it's older than our lifetime. We've already improved it to the point that we never thought we would have this. So how can you say we would never have this? And he's like, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, okay. And I had that conversation, and I said to him, I go, I had that same conversation with my friend in high school about about something else that we have today that he never thought we'd have back then. And it's like, but that's the thing. It's like you took something that they told you would be wrong, and you're like, I don't care. I'm going to try it. And it worked on one level, but not on another. But it's so valuable to get that information for yourself. And you sound a lot like me in that, you know, like when I asked you about the orchestra and stuff, and you're like, well, I don't really know that, but you know, the metals you were listing, I don't know that. You have more of a technical, like a mechanical mind than I do probably, but your memory sounds like it's a lot like Rob's, where you're like, oh, the metals and this, this, and this, and all these, you love that technology part of it. And the sound of it. And it's like, that's fascinating to me. That's fantastic. And it's like, you basically designed your own theater with, like, talk about a Frankenstein system. I mean, yeah. I mean, I was like, you're like, well, it works. Those speakers work really well. And then you went into the part where you're like, I took them apart and put them back together differently. Whoa, Jesus. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I am an engineer. I work at one of the big three out of Detroit. So, but I'm like you talking about being told it can't be done. It's impossible until it's not, right? And you, right. I'm trying to think of something you mentioned in a recent podcast you did about about something that was not thought to be possible.
It escapes me.
Yeah. But I was right there with you. Whatever it was, the example you gave, I was like, yes, yes, that's exactly right. So I apologize. Can't think of it right
now. That's okay. That's okay. That's so actually you're an engineer. I don't care. It's our podcast. It's our podcast, Kevin. Let's do it. You're an engineer. I'm going to give you the conversation my son and I had. He showed me an image. It was a cartoon, or no, it wasn't a cartoon. It was a video, and it was a lamp powering an infinite light source, a lamp powering a solar light. And it was, but it's not possible, right? Because that's not possible. And it was, what's his name? Anyways, but basically we got into a discussion about it, and I'm like, it could be possible. And he goes, no, it can't. And I go, I know why it can. It's because it takes more energy to power the light than it's generating. And he goes, it's never possible. He goes, that won't be possible. I go, but what if we could come up with a light source that took less power than what it was generating? And he goes, but that's not possible. I'm like, how do you say that? And what I said was the light bulb. And this is what I'm talking about. This is the light bulb was invented how many years, like 80 years ago, whatever it was, right? 100 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Just take a 60-watt light bulb that they invented 50, 60 years. It was called a 60-watt light bulb because it needed 60 watts of power to give you that light source, right? Mm-hmm. Now we can get, with LEDs, we can get a 60-watt light source off of, like, 8 watts. So how can you say today that we could not generate and what I said to him, I go, now, what if we could take that infinite light source? Not only is it generating power enough for itself, but you could actually have a plug on it and you could power something else off of that. And I'm like, well, and I'm like, see, I go, I'm not saying it's in our lifetime, but 100 years from now, you're telling me we couldn't have a light source that could generate its own power. I think to say it's not possible, you can't say never. So that's the type of stuff. And that's, what do you think of that? Do you think it's possible, or are you more like my son? Like, no, it's like, because the heat that comes off of it, and oh, don't give me the reality.
Exactly. Yes. And that is, we can't think outside the box. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm a creative outside the box thinker, but few are.
Right.
And I'm still trying to think of that example. I think it was, speakers. The next generation of surround sound. You mentioned putting speakers on the floor, something right. That takes you in the opposite direction. And you're immediately, it was poo-pooed by whoever you were talking
everybody
to.
Everybody I've mentioned it multiple times, and everybody's poo-pooed it. I'm like, what the hell? Yep.
But it's so interesting to see how people, they look to the future based only on what they know of the present. And it's so limiting that you can't comprehend it. But when you're truly creative, you are thinking outside the box. And you can imagine, because you're not constrained by all the realities that are hamstringing current technology.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And that's what I was saying to my son. I was like, you're thinking like with today's physics, and like the problem is that people, and it's not a problem, because engineers like my son, like yourself, it's like you're trained in our physics for safety reasons. Because a lot of times you go to school for engineering and you're building stuff that we need to use today. So I don't need you building a bridge based on an idea. I need you building a bridge based on physics that we know are, that we consider facts, right? But there are those special designs. There are special people that go outside of that, and they'll build something like you're doing with your speakers. Now, there's no, well, hopefully there's no threat to your life by the speaker design, but to be fair, what if we came up with a speaker design that literally crossed sound waves and killed you? I don't know. It would be like they'd find you dead in your house and be like, what happened? They'd turn on and they'd see, well, geez, Bob just powered on his system and blew his head off. Oh, wow. We just, guess what? 50 years later, we got a new sound weapon. That's how it was discovered. Bob blew his head off. So it's like nobody knew that existed. And that's why you didn't know it until you did it. And it's like, that's an extreme, but all of the best inventions, all of the best ideas came from something nobody ever thought of. So to your point, if you're thinking inside the box, if you're thinking about today's stuff, you're not thinking about the next great thing. You're just thinking about how to make today's stuff a little bit better, not inventing, actually creating something that had never been thought of before, because it's a crazy idea to think of. And that, to me, that's what's fun about home theater. It's like to watch the evolution of home theater. And we're kind of literally in the infancy of it, even today, is because in the 70s, when I was a kid, there was no such thing. Right. Yeah. And you go 20 years before that, they didn't even have a TV. You know, people gather around a radio, and then that was their home theater. Right. Before theater before that was a play. To have a home theater, and to be fair, that's what they did, is they would put at home for home entertainment. They would charades, and you'd do a play that you go way, way back. You got to imagine a family on Sunday nights. They would all get together and act out something. That was their home theater. And you think of what technology now, I don't have to act it out. I can put it on my big screen TV and watch a bunch of other people spend millions of dollars to act it out for me. And I can, and it's like, that's the evolution of our home theater right there. And it's like, and now it's the marriage of technology and art, and that, and what we're experiencing now, it's in all the people listening. I think that's the one commonality we have in home theater, I think, is that we love the technology, and we love the art of the movie too. And I think some people lean more towards tech, and other people lean more towards the art of the movie. And that's why when we all argue about what's the better home theater, like aspect ratio, this, that, and the other. Well, this is the way I want to experience my home theater. It's like, yeah, well, you're leaning more towards probably the art side, right? And then another person's like, I want all my gear right in the front of the room. All the lights are blinking while I'm watching the movie. I want these big speakers alongside my screen, and I want all the, because they want the gear. They love that. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with either side of that, you know? And it's look at me. I'm just rambling on. It's like, this is so much fun to get people like yourself on, and you guys come on, and it's like, it's so much fun.
Well, it's so interesting when you came along and started your version of Home Theater Podcast. It is exactly what I was missing from the other, because I listened to a bunch of other podcasts, and they, some of them talk about movies,
right?
But they don't talk about scene by scene. They don't talk about what came alive in this scene, what activated these speakers in this. It's, they're talking about the overall,
the Siskel and Ebert idea.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
What
and they might
it.
Talk so, about, yeah. Yeah. And you know, some of the, movies that are a grand spectacle, they'll talk about how great the landscape vistas were or whatever.
Right.
But nobody was going through movies and like walking you through anything like that. The closest thing was like U571. We've heard about it for 20
years. That's the next one I'm doing.
The depth charge scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But nobody would walk through the whole movie, and I'm... as you go through these movies, I love it that you're watching older movies because it inspires us to dig that movie out. I got 1,200 movies here that I watch maybe one a week when I'm things are tough at work. I might go a couple of weeks without being able to get a movie out. But you have reinvigorated my urge to watch some of these older movies, and I love it. And I wanted to tell you, I've got 1,200 DVDs. I've got maybe 100 Blu-rays. I don't even have a 4K disc player at this point. I don't know if I'll end up getting one, but as I transfer these DVDs to Plex, it is just such an incredible interface. And I know if I work my way up Zapiti and Kaleidoscape, you know, it would just get better and better. But just the standpoint of being able to sit down with my kids and say, all right, we're going to watch a movie tonight. Would you like to watch this one? And be able to bring up the cover art and who are the actors in it? Or would you rather watch this other one? And they get to see a synopsis. The only thing I would love Plex to add is if they could add a link to the official trailer. Like, it just port YouTube. It would be awesome. Or IMDb or something.
Right.
But... and we've done that before. They can't decide which movie they want to watch. It will actually go into the computer room and bring up YouTube so that they can see the trailer.
Right.
But I mean, they're watching things like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Even Brewster's Millions. We made a 2-day event of it. We watched the 1985 version with Richard Pryor, and then the next night we watched the 1945 version in black and white, and they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought the kids would be like, oh, this is old black and white. We're not going to give it a chance. But they really enjoy it, and the number of 80s references that they can now talk back to, like, they can bring it up, like, make a joke of something,
right,
referencing, you know, Back to the Future or something.
Yeah. It's funny listening to, I want to defend you on something for a second, because I can hear listeners get an Apple TV or get an iTunes or something, because everything you're asking for, that's on that. But what I think is knowing you is in our conversations and in your emails and then today, it's like that whole Plex system, you don't want to just buy an Apple TV box and get everything. You want to build that. You're that hands-on. Yeah. You're that. You built your Plex system. That's what you like. That's part of the fun for you, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you would enjoy a kaleidoscape. It's too easy, right? You want to build your system. You might like the Zapiti. You're it's a Plex. It's a more polished Plex. And I think I've never used the trailer. I've never clicked on the trailers, but I think Zapiti actually does do that. I think you can click on that. But yes, it's like, that's why, like, for everything you're looking for, it's like, oh, I wish the Plex had this. Well, that's, it literally is all there on like an iTunes something. And you get the automatic upgrade when they get to a 4K or something like that. But you love that hands-on stuff. You love that idea that you literally, like you said, you have 1200 movies. You built that system yourself. And and your kids are enjoying all of that stuff. And then going back and watching, like you said, watching all those older movies that you've cultivated. And that's awesome. That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah. And it's cool to have, because I've got 6 computers around the house. And with the Plex server, you turn on any computer. Mm-hmm. I've even got one out in the garage with a 58-inch Samsung plasma that I can just bring it up and immediately start watching something on there. So it's awesome. And also the fact that I already have the movies. So, I could get Apple TV, and then I could pay for Apple TV.
Right.
This is something that I can operate. Although, I will say, I've lost internet a couple of times, and I'm like, I've already got the movies. Why can't I watch a Plex movie? Why do I have to go through a website? So, I understand that's how you get
Your
art and everything.
The Plex system won't work if your internet to the world goes down, even though those movies are in your home.
Correct. And there are workarounds, but it's not something I wanted to spend any time doing. But my whole thing is I've got a link to where those movies reside on every computer. So if I don't have internet, it's just going into the file browser and clicking on the actual raw file and just watching it that way.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That was, I'm pretty sure a Zapiti will run. You wouldn't be able to update anything, but everything runs off of its file to begin with. But if I disconnect from the internet, like from the street, I'll still have my quote unquote internet in the house. You know what I mean? You still have your network in the house is running, but the world is shut off. I could cut the line and it would still run. And I know Kaleidoscape is the same way. Once I download it to my server here, everything's fine. But you don't get updates. You don't get any, you wouldn't be able to, any updates and stuff like that. It's like, but I think of when both of them fire up, they try to access the internet right when they turn on. But if they don't get it, you still have your system. So that's interesting. I didn't know that about Plex. But like you said, I'm sure there is you could probably get it running, right? Like you said, there's a
workaround. Yeah, and it involves going into your browser and changing...
Right, just changing
to
see the file, and it's so but on top of all that, you still have the disc too, right?
Yeah,
you still have all your discs, so you could just throw discs in and watch them that way, you know.
Yeah.
We've lost out where I live. I've lost power for days, and internet sometimes internet stays up, but if you lose power long enough, eventually the internet goes down too, because it requires power off the street. There's batteries on poles. I know that, I don't know 100% of that stuff, but I get how it works. And we've lost internet, but I have a generator and I'll have the whole house running. And if it takes enough days, I even power up the theater with the generator. So I get everything going. And I just, if we're in a time of crisis, I just don't run the subwoofers. That's where the that they take a lot of power. I mean, when the subwoofers kick on, if I tried to play Lucy, you could literally hear my generator start up, because I've tried it. You can hear the generator go, uh-oh. I'm going to have to get a second generator just for the subwoofers.
Wow. Yeah, it's been years, but there was a summer when I had family up. There's a whole house of people. And it's nighttime, and the power went out. And we've got a whole house generator. So with no power coming to the house, once the generator kicked on, we've got air conditioning, and we've got not everybody could agree on a movie. So we've got our upstairs theater room playing one movie, and then the downstairs theater playing another movie, and we're all eating ice cream doing it. And I'm like, this is modern society where the power goes out and you wouldn't even know it. Right. Yeah.
It's the apocalypse. It's like, fire up a movie.
Yep. Yep.
It's like the world's falling down around us, and it's like, what do we want to watch?
Yeah.
I know. Did you hear the conversation on AV Rant? It was like a year or so ago. Somebody asked the question, like, should you feel guilty about burning gas while running your theater during a power outage? And I still remember where I was. I was on my lawn. I was mowing my lawn. I remember where I was in the yard at the time. And I'm like, out loud with the lawnmower going and my headphones on, I'm like, no, you don't feel guilty. I'm like, why would you feel guilty? Because it's like, we have this assumption that when we use electricity, we're not burning anything. Something's burning somewhere to make that electricity, right? Just because it's in your backyard now, it's like you feel guilty. And I'm sure that I feel bad if the listener, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but if the listener that asked that is listening right now, it's like, this is just my opinion, but okay. But I'm like, it's like, yes, it's like somebody somewhere is burning that is burning something to make that power. Unless you have nuclear, I think that's the only one that doesn't actually burn something. It's like, I mean, your nuclear fusion is going on, but I don't think, like, most of power plants are coal or what. I know they're not wood. That's about all.
Yes,
I know. It's like, not very efficient, but yeah, it's like, no, I wouldn't feel, I'm like, hey, you got to get by. It's like, this is what I would have done anyways. It's like, I don't know. But I just thought that was funny when I heard that. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you have all this extravagant stuff. I'm like, you know, there's people starving in the world, but I don't feel guilty. I bought a projector. It's like, I don't know. I could have donated that money to them. I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to go down that road, because I do feel bad for the starving people. But
we live out in the country, and we've got four refrigerators and freezers around the house. So that's why we've got a generator. Mm-hmm. But when the generator turns on, you use it or lose it. It's not storing that power that it's generating. So that's the number one time when we actually turn on our air conditioner, because we're like, hey, we're generating the power. Might as well turn it on.
Well, ours is, I don't have a whole house one. I have a little, not little, it runs like basically half my house, and I have it wired to run like half my house, but then I can reroute that power a little bit to run certain things. So like when we need, all right, if I need this, I can run power off of it. And the more power I use, you can hear that generator kick on louder and louder. And then it'll go into an idle if not much is being used. So I actually do, if we use less power, I use less fuel. You know, it'll run. It, you know what I mean? It's like just like if you're driving a car. You know, if you hammer it, you're gonna run through your fuel a lot faster. So, and I can hear that. What kind of generator is yours? Is it propane?
It's a Generac, 22 kilowatt, but it's, I mean, I've looked at it under the different loads and I think it's like 20%
right
difference between idle and,
okay.
And full load. So I'm like, we might as well take advantage of it. I mean, not to turn on air conditioning
right.
if the weather doesn't demand it, but
right. yeah, you know. I'm freezing. Yeah, but let's use the power.
yeah.
Oh, that's great though that you have the whole house and you're running your. I have to actually reroute some power to get my theater going. So it would take like if we're down a couple days, I'll get the theater going. It's all on a battery backup though, so when we lose power, I actually have about 15 minutes of time to shut my theater down, and that's with everything running. It's like, I mean, the subs go out. Those aren't on battery backup. For anybody listening, don't put your subs on a battery backup. It doesn't work. It's just too much power. It's just boom. It actually damaged the subs. So I tried it. Yeah. That's how I blew up my SVS, I think.
Oh, wow.
I blew out the amp on my SVS. It was under warranty, but I put them on the battery backup, tested it out. Shut the power off to the area and let everything ran great, but all of a sudden I lost my subs and I was like, I don't know what happened, but it didn't work. And to your point earlier, hey, now I know.
Yeah.
It's like, I thought I'd try it. It's like, I mean, it's better to, especially in that situation, if you're trying something, it's better to do it then than wait for power to go out and have something go wrong. It's like, let's duplicate it and see what happens. But, all right, let's get to some more home theater stuff. What else do you have? I mean, we have quite the list here.
Because we just talked about the 1200 DVDs, I just wanted to talk about physical media and where I came from. This will show you the nerdy engineer in me. When I was
you
in
built your own speakers. That's when I was sailed, in, pal.
In college, I literally had more CD players than I had CDs.
I saw that on the list. You have more
I CDs. Care so much about the transport, and I'm fascinated by the technology. And the only discs I had were like if my brother ended up with duplicates. If he had two of something, he'd let me have the old ones. So I didn't want to spend money on media, but I would spend all this money on the transports for it. It's just bizarre.
That's so. What? So you just kept buying different hardware, and you only had like we'll call it software. You only had a few pieces of software to demo your hardware, right?
Correct.
So basically that's it. That's actually not a bad thing though. That's you're a gearhead, really. And so what you're doing is you're testing out all this different gear, but you need I would think it doesn't come along till later when that's a legit engineer at heart. I mean, that's what you're doing is you're learning what sounds right, what sounds correct, what works best. Then you build your collection from there, right?
Well, and it's not that I had a bunch of rack system CD players. I had for one for my computer, mm-hmm. one for my home system. I had an in-dash for my car, a six-disc changer that I mounted in the back.
In the trunk?
And
I had that.
Yep. And I had an Audi 5000 and the Ooh. Rear armrest would fold out of the seat.
Yep.
And I had seen newer vehicles at the time that had a pass through there.
Yep.
And so I cut the leather and cut the sheet metal behind it and created a passage there for me to be able to change out my discs in the rain. Cause I didn't want to have to
get out of the car, go to the trunk.
And it's the dumbest thing. I never did it. I never change discs in there. I just put the same six discs in.
You only own six.
Yes. Yeah, I never had. But I had the capability.
Just in case you bought a seventh, yep, you wanted to be able to change it.
And I found this piece. This is a piece of leather from that Audi 5000.
Holy cow, you say.
You would not believe the quality of this hide. We have nothing like this in automotive today.
That's fantastic. Yeah. He has a piece of leather from the car. It's like you're skinning your car. That's great. I had a 12 disc changer. In my, I had a Beretta Z26 in the 90s, and I had the thing 2 weeks, brand new. This was the first brand new car I ever bought. The car I had before it was a Beretta, like, GT. It had the 3.1 liter. I was happy with it, but that I bought it because that's all I could get at the time. That was a 90. I had a 1990 Beretta, and I enjoyed it. So it was at 1996. I was buying my first brand new car and loved it. Bright red, had the racing. It had racing graphics on it. Had really nice. I already had custom wheels from the old one, so I was putting those. Loved that car. I had it 2 weeks. The thing, like, brand spanking new. I treated this thing like a Porsche. My wife comes home from work 2 weeks old. This car's 2 weeks old. The entire front seats all on the lawn, back seat on the lawn, everything. I ripped the whole thing apart to put in this. Me and my buddy, my best friend from high school, the engineer, we ripped this whole thing apart to put in a stereo system that had it. I had an amplifier, subwoofer. I'm sorry, no subwoofers, because what I had done is I'd done my research with my other car. I found these six Pioneer 6x9s that put out such great bass. People thought I had a subwoofer. So I mounted those under the rear deck, 12 disc changer in the trunk, one disc changer in the front, because I knew that I didn't want to have to create a pass through, but this had the pass through. You could actually, which was good because that's where I could put my, slide my hockey sticks through there to fit them in the trunk. But yeah, my wife comes home and, like, the whole car is taken apart. It looks like a bomb went off. It's like seats, nice gray seats, and they're off. It was so funny, all over the lawn. But yeah, that's a 12 disc changer in the rear. And do you remember those changers, though? You drive, you hit a bump.
Skip.
Yep. Or my favorite was
wait
when
5 seconds.
Yeah, wait, or it would eject it. Do you remember that? Like, you're driving, like, ba-dum! Oh, no. Disc is coming out. And you'd be sitting there staring at your radio while you're driving, going, oh, all right, good. It didn't pop back out. Because if it popped back out, it reset the whole system. If it went, if it just kept playing, at least it picked up the song right where it was most of the time. But come such a long way. Did you ever get into, what was it, mini disc? Do you remember mini disc?
Nope. My sister got me a mini disc player for my birthday 1 year. And I thought I was going to love it, but I spent a little time playing with it and I ended up returning it. I don't even know what I did with the money that I got from it. But now I'm like, oh, that would have been cool to hold on to that.
Yeah. It just wasn't, you couldn't get mini discs. But it was nice because they were basically your first version of like an MP3, right? MP3 player, I should say. Because what was nice about them when I was doing my research on it is like a CD, when you put information onto a CD, it plays like a record, like linear. Like it spins and that song is on there to, so say you had a 1 hour CD, right? You could put an hour's worth of songs on there. Well, if you had, by the time you got to the end, because of the spaces between the songs, by the time you got to the end, if you had only 4 minutes left, but you had a 4-minute and 20-second song that you couldn't fit the next song on, right? If you remember, you'd burn onto a CD. Well, on a mini disc, it was like a computer. The song didn't have to, it could scatter the parts of the song. It would find the space.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Which is what your computer does. If you remember defragging your computers?
Yeah.
Because all your computer's doing is like, I'll find a place for this, and then it knows the path later to get that piece of information for you. When you defragged, you put it linear so that everything was easily organized. It made your computer faster. Our computers are so fast. Actually, our things are so much different now that we don't really need that. But a mini disc was like that in mini form, they didn't skip because it was more of a computer feed. It wasn't reading it like a spinning disc. It was reading it however it was reading it, but it was more stable. That's why I liked it. The problem was, it's not like you could just, everybody could buy CDs, but trying to find mini discs. So what you had to do is you had to basically record your CDs onto mini disc, and that's how. And then I think what happened with mini disc is people ended up saying, why the hell am I just putting these all on mini discs? I'll just make an MP3 player and we'll store in. I think that's how we got to MP3. And then we see what we have, iTunes now, which all came from with MP3s. We end up with Napster, right? And then everybody's trying to share their music because now we've learned how to save everything digitally. And once it's on your computer, let me share it with you, blah, blah, blah. And then iTunes is invented and we're off and running. Here we are. But I honestly think that all started with the mini disc. Because once you go digital, that was, I mean, CD is digital too, but just that format, the way they could save it. So it was pretty cool, but I dabbled with it. But like I said, it wasn't a huge, you couldn't just buy movies. Actually, I think they did have movies on it too. Buy them like you could CDs. So,
I loved MP3 players for like what you mentioned, because even if it's a spinning disc, it's loading that into memory in the player.
Right.
So it's far less susceptible to any of that. But my first portable MP3 player was a Reovolt back in like 1998, and I just remember there was a firmware update for it, and I had never heard of a firmware update before. So this was my first
mail
experience.
Away for this.
No, you download it.
I know.
Burn it onto a disc.
But crazy.
After the firmware update, the original Reovolt that I had 20 levels of volume control. After the firmware update, I had 40. So it's, you know, it goes up to the same volume, but it's more fine gradation. And so, whereas before I'd be toggling between, this is just a little bit too loud for this song, and the next one down is too soft.
Yeah.
This new gradation allowed me to find the perfect volume for listening to something. So that being my first example of a firmware update, it was incredible, eye-opening to me of what it was capable of doing to completely change the functionality of a device to improve it.
Yep. You know what's funny is I think young kids today, Kevin, they don't understand what it was because, but think about it. We take that stuff, even you and I today take that stuff for granted now, but it's memories like that, that you're like, oh yeah. You're like, it's like the idea, like you said, of a firmware update. It's like, now we're just like, we get mad. Like, come on, give me a firmware update to correct this. When back then, like, talk about thinking outside of the box, we didn't even think that stuff was possible. This thing stinks. I got to wait for the new version to come out. Oh, wait, they can just change this one? Come on. It's like, the one that I like about that is that, and they haven't executed it a lot, but they could. But I think because physical media discs, they aren't as prevalent anymore. And I think this is what we're going to find more of digitally, is they literally can change. They can change your Blu-ray disc. You load into a Blu-ray if your Blu-ray player is connected to the internet, which most of them do, they ask for a connection, but if it's connected to the internet, they could change a scene on that hard disk because what they can do is they can update it and send a file to your Blu-ray player to say, when you get to the scene, play this downloaded scene instead of this scene. It's wow. possible. That's they
have. You've never heard of that happening, though?
No,
I've never heard of it.
No, okay. I've never heard of it happening, but it's a way I read about it. I don't know, 10 years ago, something ridiculous. Like when Blu-ray was first coming, this was before 4K, but they were like, it's a great way to add additional scenes. They could do that to your, you know, you could literally insert a scene into a movie. They could change the movie. And it's, there's all of these ideas that they have possible, but they just have never really implemented. Much like, the idea of, when they went to high def TV, before high def TV came out, it was possible that your high def feed, because of the way it's digital and it's not analog anymore, when they went to high def, you were going to have, they were saying, one of the abilities you might be able to have at home is, say when you're watching a football game, I want to watch this from the other side of the field, and you could change your viewing angle.
Yeah.
So they were going to give, like, you were going to be able to be like the producer, like, so all, like, you know, when you're watching a football game, there's a producer, they get, you know, you hear them on the radio, on the TV, like the producer in the truck is blah, blah, blah. But all of those camera angles that you're getting, somebody's saying, go to camera two, go to camera one, go to do this. You know, we all know that. Mm-hmm. Well, what these articles I was reading were saying, like, you're going to be able to pick which camera you want to see. So you're going to be at home because all of those are being fed in. And because the bandwidth, it's capable of it, you'd be able to get, it's all coming to you anyways, but they're telling you in the truck, they're saying, just show them this one, show them this one, show them this one. Well, why not let the person have that? And that's what they were saying was going to be possible. We've never seen that. It's never been implemented, but they said it was possible. And much like the Blu-ray, they could change these scenes and they can do this stuff and send that to your Blu-ray player, and then you would be able to have an update. You know what did it? One of the Terminator discs, Terminator 2 discs, had an access, did something similar to that, and it was in the menu system. I have the Blu-ray. I can't remember which one it is, but basically when you put it in, it would come up on the screen like, Skynet was monitoring you. It would tell you where you were. It would tell you the weather outside, and it was all like across the screen. It hasn't, the last few times I've put it in, last few years, I should say, it hasn't worked. So I'm wondering if the server for that is like, that doesn't exist. But when you first put the disc in, it would update and tell you where you were and all. So basically it was communicating with the internet, and it was downloading that information and giving it to you. So that's the smallest implementation I've seen for something like that, where, but we're seeing it digitally though now on movies, like, you watch a movie digitally, I can't remember the movies, but Disney's done it. Disney's edited out scenes of their movies digitally on Disney Plus and stuff. So they're adapting movies because of the times, you know, they'll edit stuff out that way. But there's also corrections they do, or improvements. Oh, here's the 4K version. Here's your firmware update for your movie, right? The 4K versions come out on iTunes or on Kaleidoscape's doing the same thing. Now you're getting it digitally. Here's the 4K version if you've already owned Godfather. That was the most recent one. So they are, we are there and they're doing it, but it was possible on Blu-ray, which was pretty cool. I don't think it'd be too big of a file to do it with a, you know, update to a 4K version, but yeah.
Yeah. So I can understand, if you're watching sports, maybe you want to, pick a different view, but what is your opinion on a pop-up coming up? You're in the middle of a movie, and then something pops up and says, hey, would you like to view an alternate perspective on this? Like,
I don't like being taken out of the movie. No,
that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. I agree with you 100% on first viewing. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I like having, I think it's a neat option. Like, so say I've seen Terminator a million times, right? All right. Or Star Wars, and you're like, hey, let's sit down and watch it with the pop-ups and see what else they have to offer. It's very similar to audio commentary, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit down and watch a movie and put the audio commentary on that I've never seen before. Yeah. But the pop-up would be kind of like that. So it's like, hey, oh, look at this. It's basically, those pop-ups are, it's an extra feature that's kind of fun to do if you've seen the movie a bunch of times and you want to learn more about it. It's basically what it is. So I like the idea, but I would hate to have that happen while I'm watching it the first time. That would be, it's like, just like watching movies with commercials. I don't like it. I want to watch a movie. First time I want to sit down and watch. I was just having this conversation with G. Cornell on email about he was the one that recommended those who wish you're dead, wish me dead. I think it was. I think that's the Angelina Jolie movie, Fire Jumper movie. Okay. He recommended it, and I was like, absolutely. It was on Kaleidoscape, so I bought it, and I can't wait to see it. But I'm having so much fun watching other movies. Like, if I have an hour to kill, and this is what I just told him on. And I told, G. Cornell and I had talked about this maybe a year ago or so through email, right? He can actually watch a movie by, okay, say it's a 2-hour movie. He'll watch 45 minutes, you know what? He can break it up that way and watch a movie. Like, in 3 days, he can watch a whole movie for the first time. I don't like that. It's like he'll go scene by scene by scene. And it was a great conversation that we had, because I was like, that's great. You can do that. I want that to flow. I want those scenes are written to flow together, and I want to experience that the first time. Right. Once I've seen a movie, that's what I love. Like, if I have an hour to kill, I love to come down and be able to pop in and out of different scenes and just experience getting into, like, what you're saying, that tech, and just let my room just explode, and let's just have fun and watch these different scenes. And then I'm all right, I got to go to work now, or I gotta go out and do this now, but I got an hour to kill, so I'm going to do that. But if I have only an hour to kill, I don't want to start a movie I haven't seen yet, you know? And it's, sounds like you're kind of the same way, 'cause you just love the tech.
I will not start watching a movie unless I think I'm going to watch the whole thing in one sitting. But the past couple of years, you know what keeps happening? I fall asleep. I fall asleep during a movie because I'm like, I just had a rough day at work.
Right.
I just want to sit down with a big tub of popcorn and watch this movie. This will, you know, make the whole day
work
better.
Yeah.
But because I'm so tired, I end up falling asleep during the movie. And then I've got like three movies on Netflix right now that I've got to watch the second half because I fell asleep.
But it's not the movie's fault. Like you said, it's not the movie's fault. It's that you're literally that tired.
Yeah.
And now you're just so comfortable, and it's,
yeah,
you know, and it's so funny. It reminds me, my buddy John and I from doing the other podcast. When we first started doing that podcast, we used to do a breakdown of a movie, not home theater wise, but just the enjoyment of a movie, right? That would be one episode a week. We'd do that. And we'd do a Star Wars movie or something. And he'd be like, well, I fell asleep, so I didn't really get to finish it. I'm like, what are you talking about? And we'd be talking about this in the podcast. I'm like, but he would go to bed and put it on. I'm like, this is his research into the podcast.
Oh,
like,
no.
He knows we're going to be talking about Empire Strikes Back tomorrow night. So he'd put it on while he's in bed. I'm like, you're in bed. Of course you're going to fall asleep. But it's like, he loves the movie. But that's the thing. It's like, it is. But you won't start a movie, even if you've seen it a bunch of times. Is that what you're saying? Like, even if you've seen the movie a bunch of times, you won't start it if you can't finish it?
Correct.
Wow.
And,
okay,
you know, this opens up the larger question I wanted to talk to you about. I know you've talked about how when you go to the theater, commercial theater, you could be annoyed by people on phones, kids with their light up sneakers and stuff. But I love home theater so much. I want to show family, friends. I want them to experience it.
Yeah.
But I can't watch movies with most of them because they want to be on their phone or they want to talk to me about something, or, you know, they just don't have the same type of movie experience that I want to have.
Right. They're not engaged like you. Right.
Yep. And so what I typically do, I take them on a walkthrough, and at most I'll play one of my favorite scenes is San Andreas when the Hoover Dam breaks, because it just lights up the room of every speaker. And I got a lot of them. And
stacked on top of each other.
So, but there's one person who I used to watch movies with all the time. And it was my wife's twin sister's husband. And he and I did not get along, but we could both sit quietly and enjoy the heck out of a movie. And, you know, he was a drummer in a band, and I played him. Oh, I can't believe I'm forgetting it now. T.K. Simmons, or it's a movie about a drummer, a boy who goes to a school, a drum school, just came out like 6 years ago.
Yes.
J.K. Simmons, I think. J.K.
Simmons. And it's, it has something to do with drums too in the title. It's, it's killing me.
Yeah. Anyway, I rented this movie on Blu-ray because I knew he would love this movie. The next day he went and bought it. He enjoyed it so much. But my wife said, "Kevin, it's weird. You don't like him, but you'll invite him over, and then you don't even talk. As soon as he gets in, you take him down to the theater, you watch a movie, and then he leaves. It's just awkward." I said, "But you know what? He and I both love the experience of watching that movie, and we're kind of meeting each other where we can handle one another, because we're just very different people, but we found this one thing that we both love."
Right.
But my wife can't understand how I could do that.
That's, you're married to a twin, and you don't get along 100% with your quote unquote brother-in-law.
Correct.
But
they are identical twins.
Oh, are they?
But they are so different personality wise. I never would have imagined. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very different people.
But here's what's really interesting to me is you said you didn't refer to him as your brother-in-law. You referred to him as your twin sister-in-law's husband.
I just wanted you to see the chain of how I...
Okay, now I want to... this is where it gets interesting. I also am married to a twin. She's not identical. Mm-hmm. But I'm married to a twin. And I, too, don't get along with my sister-in-law's husband. Very much like you. Like, we get along, but we clash, right? Mm-hmm. And I refer to him as the same way. you're not my, that's my wife. Or I'll say he's my wife's brother-in-law. It's so funny. It's like, we just clash. And it's as much me as it is him. It's that we just clash. It's just who we are. But I also wonder, like you said, your wife and her sister, her twin sister, they're different people. Well, you're going to be a different person than who your sister-in-law's married to, right? So that's why you clash. I wonder if that's part of it too. It's like, because there's a very special bond between twins, whether they're, I'm sure it's even more so if you're identical, but like my wife and her sister, they're like they literally slept in the same bed all the way to, like, in high school. My wife said, oh, yeah, yeah. They had their own beds, but if they were comfortable, they just crawl into bed. They've been together since, conception for all intents and purposes, right?
Uh-huh.
They're very, very close. And I think, like, now you and I are the ones that separated that. It's like, oh, that's... And then, so, like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. I maybe there's a competitive thing there, but I don't know. But it's funny that you have that same feeling and kind of the same situation. Interesting. Very interesting. Whiplash.
Yes. Yes. There you go. Whiplash. Yep.
Came to me while you were talking. I was like, because I knew it was like, it was a drummer type thing, but it was like, yeah, it was supposed to, it was something like that. But I was like, okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I lost my train of thought on that one. But anyways. Let's see. What else do we have?
We could talk about displays.
Yes, you had a great comment on that. What was that comment? I don't have it in front of me. Projectors versus displays, and like your projectors are going up or something, prices?
Yeah, I actually want to
push back on that one on you.
Uh-huh. So right now, my theater, I've got a 60-inch Pioneer Kuro on the wall, and then I've got a 125-inch acoustically transparent screen that comes down in front of it, and then I've got a 1080p Sony VPL 35.
Nice.
It's for 2013
2014. Yep.
The display is on it, and I've been thinking of updating that. I want to go to 135 inch 2.35:1, because this 125, it's a 16:9, and boy, when I watch a movie that is in 16:9 ratio and it's up on the screen, it's, to me, it's too big. So I never would have thought that I would rather have it wider for the 2.35 instead of the standard 16:9. But because it is just so so big to look at, that I'm thinking I'm looking towards that other ratio. But the cost is so prohibitive. I mean, when I got my 125-inch motorized screen, acoustically transparent, it was like $350. Now I can't touch a 135. Even a 16:9, which is the most common, for under like $2,800. And I'm like,
really?
Do I really want to go? And that's just for the screen. Then I need to get the new projector for it. And I love the black levels of OLED. So I can't go too cheap with the projector, because I just won't tolerate the gray blacks.
Right.
So, but what I did this summer was I bought a 85-inch Sony and a LCD, and then I got a 77-inch Sony OLED to compare the two of them, and I ended up never even taking the bubble wrap off the 85 inch, because I put the 77 inch up underneath my plasma, and I just watched the same movie on both screens
at the same
probably
time.
Like yeah. Four or five movies that I went through, and I was amazed at how well the Kuro performed. I mean, it doesn't have HDR, it doesn't have it's not 4K, but it was good enough that if I didn't have the OLED right there, that I would not feel I was missing anything. There's some banding that you'd see once in a while on the Kuro, but held up amazingly well.
what's the source you're feeding it? Are you feeding it your, because you said
it was,
you have
just
DVDs.
Fire TV. Oh, okay. Amazon Fire TV. Yeah.
So your banding could be your, that's probably your Fire TV. That's your internet, right?
Okay.
But your sources, because you said mostly you have DVDs, you have a few Blu-rays, right? So you're, mm-hmm. you're going with, I mean, DVDs are standard def, right?
Oh yeah.
If I remember, yeah,
480p.
Right. So DVDs are standard def. The Blu-rays are high def, and then obviously you said you don't even have any 4Ks. So your 4K content you're getting through is streaming, if you get any, mm-hmm. if you even have that. So
yeah.
I would say under your system, I don't think you would see the benefit, right, of an OLED, because you're not feeding it that you're not feeding it enough information to be able to get that benefit, so they probably would look similar. And that's, I mean, I wouldn't get an OLED to, you know what I mean? Like your display is capable of more. You're just not feeding it enough, you know? And I'm not saying I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that that's why you're not getting that. I think that if now I think, and I don't know this 100%, because I've never done a plasma to OLED difference. But I think if you fed your sources to the plasma and then fed the exact same information from the 4K, you know what I mean? Like a 4K disc to an OLED, I think you would be blown away.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go out on a limb there. And, and you know what I mean? Because there's just so much more information in those scenes that, like I said, and I'm ballparking this off of what I went through when I added my Lumigen to my mm-hmm. projector, and the amount of information that was pulled out that I hadn't seen there before. And you're like, and what the details that it can extract for you. Whereas you literally don't even, from your source, you don't have those. They're not there. They're not being clipped off by the end source. They're not there in the original source. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, the best impression that I got from my short review in the movie In the Line of Fire, there is a scene where Eastwood is in a shadow, and on the OLED, you could see his face, you could see every detail, and in the plasma, it was just a dark figure.
Okay.
You couldn't see features. But again, that's me being able to compare
side by side
directly. I wasn't, right. You know, I would have just assumed it was supposed to be shrouded, that we're not supposed to see his face, you know. But the biggest takeaway for me was that I'm okay sticking with the plasma until it dies. You know, because I was like, is it time to move this plasma out to the garage? And because the plasma that's currently in the garage, I got it for free from a buddy who was getting rid of it because it had like the HDMI sparkles always on the screen, and I didn't care out in the garage, so I just took it. Right? But after seeing that setup, and it was I bought the 77 inch OLED open box from Best Buy. It was $2,200, which is an awesome price for a 77 inch OLED.
Yeah,
but if I already had a display that I was okay with, I was like, I'm really spending $2,200. I don't have to spend right now. Right. I can wait, and then maybe 2 years from now, 3 years from now, I can get an 83-inch OLED for that same price, you know, open box. And as long as I'm not in a hurry, I can benefit by kicking the can down the road and just enjoying what I've got. But the beauty of OLED with a DVD is because it's there's so limited information on it that the OLED it makes it shine. It's so much better presentation of compromised material. And I've got cartoons like Futurama and stuff that my wife cannot go to sleep without something on the TV in the background. And years ago, we discovered Futurama is just perfect for her to have on in the background. So I've got, what are there, like 8-9 seasons of Futurama. I put them all on disc, plugged into the Blu-ray player. And so we just hit play, and it just plays all night long through it. And I'm looking at these episodes that I had seen before on my computer, how bad and pixelated they were.
Yeah.
But the OLED, because of that contrast ratio, it just makes the best out of this limited material.
It up converts it so nicely that you just this is what I mean. You are like that's the tech in you. It's like you actually want to take a piece of technology that's capable of so much more if you feed it the right information, but you want to see what it can do with the lesser information and see how great of a job it does. It's like, I mean, it's like coming full. You said earlier, you took these speakers that were told you can't do that with them, and you made it work by taking them apart, stacking them, doing what you were told not to do, and redesigning the speaker itself, and be like, I'm going to get a sound that I like out of it. That is so cool. That is so, like, to take it all, like, to be like, I'm making Futurama look better. And it to me, it's like, what I appreciate out of that is, like, it's not even about the content. Like you were saying earlier about, you either love music or you love the sound of music, but like it's not necessarily about the content. It's like, you're watching that content, you're entertained by it, but I think you're getting more entertainment out of how it's been improved by the tech, right?
Yeah, I'd compare it to you're listening to a scene with a lot of bass, mm-hmm. and you go over and you stare at your subwoofer to see the excursion.
Yeah,
you're getting enjoyment out of seeing that stupid cone go back and forth. Right. That has nothing to do with the movie. It's the geek in you that's like, holy smokes, look at how this thing is pounding. And it's just another level of appreciation that home theater people have.
Exactly. It's like you'll be sitting there in your theater, or for me, it's like I'll be sitting in my theater watching a movie that I've seen like a million times, and then just being like, what can I upgrade? Or let me test it. You know what? Right in the middle of something, I'll get up and go, these have been towed in for a while. I wonder what they sound like if they're not towed in. And you change. You just get up in the middle of a movie. It's still dark in the room. And I'll go up to my speaker. And for me, my speakers are behind cloth masking in the front so that you can't see this. Mm-hmm. I got to pull that. It's dark. The only light in the room is coming off the screen. And I'm like pulling that down. Let me tow this way. And let me do. And I'll do that like once a year. But like, where does that come? And then you just go back and sit there and okay. All right. Like, and it's just, how do things change? How does it sound? And like you said, when you get your new subwoofer, right? You spend time staring at the front of it. It's like, if I could get it to do that without making any noise, that'd be fun too. I just want to watch, like, and you've seen those videos. Like, people have tweeted that. People have put that out, like, you know you're a home theater nerd if this is entertaining, and it'll just be a video with no sound of just, like, the front of a subwoofer going back and forth, and you're like, yeah, that is pretty cool. It's like, you know what's even nerdier? Mm. This is, like, Car Guys. And like, that scene from Gone in 60 Seconds, when they'll play the sound of a car, and they can pick out what sound it is, what year it is, what, you know what I mean? And it's like, imagine, I got to imagine there are people that can watch a subwoofer move and tell you what that was. Like, wouldn't that be cool? Be like, oh yeah, that's like, imagine that game, right? Uh-huh. We're like, you and I play in that game. Like, you send me a video and be like, what is this one? And they'd be like, and they'll send it to you and be like, oh, I know that one, because you know, it'd be like, that's the opening of Lucy, because you know how it looks when you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Imagine people, I can't do it. I know, cause I don't stare at, but imagine, I got to imagine somebody's out there that can do it. Maybe not a listener of mine, but there's gotta be a nerd out there that goes, yeah, I can do that.
It's like on the Matrix, Neo being able to look at the stream of stream of numbers and
know what's happening. Yep, it's so. But imagine that. I mean, people can do it with cars. They can do that, you know. And to be able to see a subwoofer move and go, oh yeah, that was the explosion in Terminator 2 when Cyberdyne blew up. Really? Mm-hmm. And then you put the sound to it and you hear.
Yep. And I literally have a video of me putting a 5 hertz sine wave to a subwoofer and showing the excursion. Boom,
boom, boom. Yeah, how?
Yep.
That's ugh.
And it's it's just a little 10 inch, so you're not hearing anything, but it's still it's doing its best to reproduce the
5 hertz. Mm-hmm. You can't hear anyways.
No.
Yeah, you can't hear it or anything. I mean, we don't hear, what is it, under 20, right? We can't hear anything under that. So it's like,
But that was actually a fun project. We've got a pool outside, and I've got rock speakers that are, I've got 6 rock speakers all around the pool. And I was like, I'd really like some bass out here. And on AVS Forum, they showed how to make a sump sub, which you take two. Yep. Well, they didn't put theirs in the ground. I've heard of people putting them in the ground. But this was just, you take 2 sump pump basins and put them back to back and bolt them together and have a subwoofer at one end. And you can port them or not port them. I got a beautiful Alpine marine 10 inch driver, so it's made for wet environments, and I got it for like $15 open box at Best Buy, and I put it into this system, and I've been using it for, I don't know, 8-9 years that it's been cranking out there, and it's an awesome, awesome system that I just, I leave it. In the beginning, I would bring in the equipment at winter time, but now I just put a couple of bags over the rock speakers and just leave the sump sub out there all year round, and it's been fine.
And how the bass is good? You're getting good?
Yeah. It's got, and since then, I've put another, I buy tons of audio equipment from Salvation Army. So if a subwoofer goes out, I'll just turn it into a passive, because the boards go bad and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll just convert it into a passive driver. And then I'll put it outside, out in the rain and stuff. And it will add to the bass outside, but it's surprisingly full, because it's got no real boundary reinforcements out there, but it's pleasant enough for background music,
right?
That it does very well. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's because I have rock speakers. It's like, no, we have twin wives, we have rock speakers. We have home theaters. We're piling up the list here, buddy. I have rock speakers around my backyard area as well. And I didn't get into the subwoofer thing. I didn't want to, but I just did it so that I could have, instead of turning up one speaker and blaring it in one spot, I just wanted to be able to disperse the sound. It's all, it's run off of my Sony receiver that I had in my apartment over 20 years ago. But yeah, I don't really get into quality of music, quality of sound outside, because it's all ambient. It's all just like while you're having people over and you're all hanging out, it's like, I'm not looking for that. Although I did play, because I'm running it through a surround system. So it basically is set up in a surround sound format. It's not run in a mono to each speaker. I did run it that way. The one song I played out there that actually blew me away was Pat Benatar. And it was Running With, what is it? Running With the Shadows of the Night. Do you remember? You know that song? It's, I don't want to sing it. I think it's Shadows of the Night, but it's like something like that. But there's a, I don't know if it's a drum solo or something that goes around the yard. And I was like, what the hell? I was just out there. I was like cooking dinner on the grill and I had it playing and I backed it up. I'm probably, when we're done, I'm probably going to go outside and put it on again. But this was like 2 years ago. I was like, oh my God. I was like, honey, come out here, listen to this. Like, put it around the yard. It was like, wow. I was like, that was the one song that I was like, holy crap. Because I just happened to be the only one in the yard listening. Mm-hmm. So I had it up pretty loud and I was the only one there. So I could actually hear the separation. But that was pretty cool. But most of the time, it's just wherever it's playing around the yard. So,
yeah.
But,
well, I got to tell you, my, I've got a Marantz surround receiver that plays to the outdoor speakers, and I actually ran Odyssey on those because it's the speakers are on the far side of the pool, and I set up the tripod in the patio just to make sure that all the speakers were level matched.
That is awesome. How long? So
I had to run an extension cord, well, you know, because it's.
Did you
bring the
plug? So yep. Did you run the receiver? What did you extend? Did you bring the receiver out so you could connect the microphone to that, or did you run a longer cord to the, like, how far away? Like, mine is like, I'd have to like 90 feet to be able to get to my patio area probably for the microphone. But that is awesome. You ran Odyssey.
It was like a 10 or 12 foot. It's all I needed to add to it to get to the area that I was.
Wow. That is. And how was the improvement? Did you hear any? Did it do anything?
All it did was assure me that I was getting the equal sound out of every speaker. Because, right. Number one, they're rock speakers from whatever, it's a Best Buy brand thing. So I don't know.
$50 a pair or something like that?
Quality of them. Yeah. But now they're 6.5-inch woofers, coaxial. Oh, okay. So they sound better than most that I've tried.
Right.
And that's why when I found out they worked, I got like 5-6 pair of them. I've got a new pair in box just in case one of these dies. Because you can't get them anymore. All they have is the Bluetooth solar powered ones,
right?
That just there's no comparison. I mean, these things, once you take the stop trying to play bass out of them, they sing. They you could play so loud, and it remains clear, clean. Yeah, when I like something, I stack up on them. I like
you think?
I like Vimota headphones, so I've got 4 pair of them. Just so when one dies, I've got another ready to go.
You got a whole house generator. You've got all this. You're like literally preparing for the apocalypse. You're buying all this stuff so that you're like, hey, I don't care if I can never go to the store again. I'm good.
Yeah.
I love look, my outdoor system is run I almost replaced my receiver a couple years ago. I said it on the podcast. I almost pulled out the receiver and I was going to run it off of I got an old Rotel receiver, and I was going to run it off of that just to mess around. And then as I was pulling out my old Sony receiver, I kind of like got a little choked up, and I'm like, this is what I taught my kids on. This is the receiver I taught my kids on, right? And I was like, taught them how to use the inputs, how to use this, how the back of the receiver work. Don't touch the. And it was all in an education to, now, to give you an idea, this was all in our apartment. We left our apartment when my son was 4 and my daughter was 2. So they were being taught on this receiver.
Early on, huh?
Because I had a friend of mine tell me like a horror story of his kid putting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the VHS, right? Because it had an open slot, and the kid sees an open slot, and they're like, hey, hey, what do kids do all day long? It shapes, fit shapes in holes. This is how we, this is how we learn their cognitive abilities. Here's a star. Where's the star hole? Put it in there. Peanut butter jelly sandwich. That's the same shape as a VHS. Well, look at that. And the kid shoved it in there. And it's like, once it goes in, what's inside there? Bunch of delicate parts, right?
Yeah.
So never mind. I mean, do you remember the program on the internet back in the day where, hey, want a cup holder for your office? And you download the little thing and the tray comes out. Remember that? Well, that's based off of little kids' idea, like, hey, that looks like a cup holder. So instead of all that, to combat that, I should say, I actually taught them, this is exactly what this is. This is how you use these things. So they would know, okay, we don't put peanut butter and jelly in here. We put this in here. So I want, even at a young age, I wanted to show them. And it was fun, too, because babysitters would come over, like my parents or something, and be like, they want to watch TV, and here goes a little two-year-old waddling across the room, and turning on the TV, turning the sound up, and doing all this stuff. It was great. But, so my point is, got a little tear in my eye. I can't replace that. But now I want to. Even for a little, I want to get a Denon or a Marantz or something and run my outdoors so I can run Odyssey. I'm like, because that actually sounds fun. Like hearing the test tones going around your yard. Let me ask you this. Did you have to tell the neighborhood to not start a lawnmower while you were running Odyssey?
No. It's funny. Back at that time, everybody's on a 5-acre parcel. And at that time, we didn't have neighbors on either side. So it felt like we had 15 acres all to ourselves. Now, since then, we've got neighbors on both sides. And one of them has a few donkeys. And so I'd have to have
them keep the donkeys quiet. Or dumb kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, donkeys. But when they bray, oh, my goodness, they can get pretty loud.
You are out in the woods. You got donkeys for neighbors?
Yeah.
Literally. So you're not actually making fun of anybody. I just did. They got a couple of donkeys. Out here, that would mean kids.
Okay.
But I'm not that far in the woods. But I do have neighbors I have farm area around me. I have horses and stuff like that. But maybe somebody has donkeys. But it would be possible. But that's pretty funny. When you run Odyssey EQ, like even in my house, I'll be like, I don't have 100% soundproofing. So I'm like, please don't stomp on the floor. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm running this. Or I'll just do it when I'm not home. But I can't even imagine trying to run it outside. You'd have and find quiet because somebody sparks up a lawnmower. You'd be like, oh, I just screwed everything up.
Yeah.
I need quiet in the neighborhood.
Don't you understand?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Odyssey EQ outside. I am very intrigued.
But the reason I did that is because I got a projector and for outside. Hmm. And I've got retractable awnings. And I put gussets throughout the awning so that I could hang a projection screen down from it. And I got I had read that if you have a rear projection set up, as long as you shield light behind the screen, it's a perfect contrast ratio. That it's if you control the light behind the screen,
right? No ambient light, you mean
blacker blacks than you'd be able to get from a forward projection. So I had this vision that all summer long we're going to be watching movies outside, and I thought I did the right thing, because putting the projection screen or putting the projector behind the screen, you can hide it from moths and stuff, because they'd be attracted to the thing. So unfortunately, in the summertime, it doesn't get dark until like 9 o'clock.
Right.
And here my kids are 6, 7 years old, and we can't keep them up late enough to watch a movie. So we watched one movie, Jurassic Park, and the kids wouldn't even stay seated to watch it, because they're outside. They want to play when they're outside. So it was one of the biggest failures of my home theater trials.
Right.
But
it was a great idea.
Yeah.
Right. It's a great idea. You probably did a great job implementing it, but the actual execution of it and being able to, nobody does it. It's just, it's like going to the drive-in, really. You're setting up a drive-in situation, and then what happens when you go to the drive-in? What do you see when you're at the drive-in? You see a bunch of kids running around.
Yeah.
They're all running around the cars. There's usually a few drive-ins in our area, there's usually like swings and stuff up in the front. So like the parents can be sitting in the car watching the screen, and there's their kid swinging on the swing, you know, they don't care. I know it's, and that's the thing. It's, you know, like you said earlier, when you were talking about like your home theater, you want people to come in and experience it. And we build these theaters and we want to show them off. Nobody cares about them like we do. So you just built it outside, and like everybody's like, "Yeah, I'm going to bed."
But I wanted to mention, because you're talking about how you are bringing people together who all share the same thing, and we're able to talk to other people through this, and that's one of the things that AVS Forum, way back in 2006. I was invited to somebody's home to see their home theater through AVS Forum.
Oh, wow.
So that's where I learned, okay, the internet, you don't just have to remain online, that you can meet people and get together. And so I went to a couple of theaters in that era that really inspired me of things I did want to do and things I no longer wanted to do based on what I saw. But the first theater I ever saw that had a projection screen, we watched Unforgiven, which since then I want to watch it again, because I didn't give it its proper due. I watched it when I was still in it was like a 1992 movie, so I think I was first or second year of college when it came out, and I had no tolerance for drama movies. I thought Unforgiven, I thought it was going to be all shoot 'em up, and so I didn't appreciate it back then. but I watch it at this guy's theater. He's got this awesome theater, but the projector was so dim. It was very disappointing, and he had it was an old bulb. And he had it set to eco mode because he said how expensive the bulbs were. But I'm like, I'm in a $10,000 theater.
Right.
And this bulb can't be more than $500. And you just invited a dozen people over who only care about home theater. And we're watching on this dim, dim screen.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Especially Unforgiven too. That's a darker movie. It's definitely a darker movie, which is, sounds funny, like you'd think dim would be better, but it's not, because if everything's dim, you need that contrast. So you need those things, whatever's supposed to be bright, you need it to be brighter to make your darks appear darker, right? So it's kind of weird. Like a dim bulb actually affects your black levels too.
Oh yes.
But Unforgiven is the first Laserdisc I ever bought.
Wow.
I wanted Terminator 2 at the time. Star Wars. But when I bought my Laserdisc player, where I bought it, they only had a small selection of Laserdiscs. And that was the only, so that's why it became my first Laserdisc that I ever bought. And I have it sitting, as a matter of fact, it's just sitting in my theater on the little desk that's on the side of my room next to the candy. But that's the Unforgiven Laserdisc is just leaning up against the wall right there. But yeah, I actually love that movie. I'm a little older than you. I'm 50. I'll be 52 in July. I think I bought that in 93 on Laserdisc or something like that is when it came out. I can't remember. I know I'd just been married and, my wife let me get a Laserdisc player because I mean, it was a lot of money. You had to save up for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I saved up enough money, you know? It's a shit. It is funny how the internet, like, Steve George said the other day about, we always say Twitter can be tough and stuff like that, but all these people that I've met, and now because of Twitter, because how great people are and how you can cultivate. I mean, and we've got a lot of crap going on right now with Twitter and people, oh, what's going to happen with Twitter, blah, 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 right? You can cultivate it however you want. It's nothing.
Like you said, it's what you make it.
It is what you make it. And it's because of Twitter, because of all of that, is what made me do this and not be afraid to have people on and talk to, because everybody has been great. And it's, I can't say I ever had doubts. Which is kind of stupid. I was just going to say I didn't know, which is a doubt. But you know what I mean? Like, I never even thought of it that way. It's like thinking outside the box, right? I spent my whole life looking for just, hey, anybody interested in talking about home theater? You know, like, hey, I like home theater. Oh, yeah, that's great. Okay, they're not interested. Or I never thought to put this out the way it has evolved to what I have now, right? To what we have now for the podcast and having people on. I never thought of that. So it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't a doubt, but it was like, as I was talking to more and more people on Twitter and getting into conversations and then having the conversations and then like it's kind of the idea of what you and I are doing right at this moment was an evolution of ideas. It was like, okay, I'm going to do Takeover Tuesday where I talk about everybody's, emails and stuff. Right. And then it was like, I'm having all these conversations and it got harder to keep up with and harder and harder and harder. I'm like, oh my God. And it's like, but then I'm like, why don't I just have these people on? And then I started thinking of that and I'm like, my biggest doubt was whether people would be for it. Like you get one person on and then you got nothing, what happens if only one person steps or two people? And it's people are stepping up and I appreciate it. Like, I mean, we don't know each other at all, but look at this, but now we do, and I feel like it's like, that's what happens. And it's, I don't want to say sidetracked, our conversation just kept going, but your comment earlier about my podcast breaking down the movies and I did that. Like I've said on the podcast before, the reason like you said, nobody was doing that. Right. And that's how I literally found AV Rant. Right. If you go back and listen to my first podcast with Tom, the first time I had Tom on, it was them and their title of their podcast was Jurassic Park in 4K. That was the title. And I was like, ooh, I was already listening to other home theater podcasts at the time, but I was like, I want to hear that. And I was like, I wanted to hear what has become my podcast. I wanted them to break it down. Uh-huh. Right.
Yep.
And then I listened to them and I'm like, all he did was say, yeah, Tom, it was good. That's the basin. It was painful. He did a quick breakdown of it, but very quick. And then they went into there and I loved their show. So I just, I kept listening. Then I went back and listened to old stuff. And like everybody else, it's like, we nerd out on that stuff. I mean, we find AV Rant and HD Guys super entertaining. And week after week, it's just tech talk. Right. Yeah. And that is, we do absolutely love that. But I kept trying to find somebody that was talking about the scenes and those articles that I used to read where they would do little blurbs, like you said, and they would give you like, hey, this scene was pretty cool. And that was about it. But what I wanted to say to you is it's you guys that keep it, literally is you guys that keep this podcast going. It's comments like what you made earlier about me, like how I break that down. And it's like, U571, I've already got it stamped out. I just have to sit down and do it again, but I have to break down each scene and record it, right? Mm-hmm. That takes hours for me to like sit down and do that and then edit it and do it and put it all out there. And at times when it gets harder, at times of the year, I should say, it gets harder to do,
yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. I'm busy now with work. I'm doing that. And it's like to sit down, I'm like, okay, I got to do this. But it's you guys keep me going. Like you saying that, like I want to like right now, like, all right, I got to get in my room. I want to do that for you guys. I want, because I do love doing it. And what's, I can't tell you guys how many times I sit down and I'm like, it feels like a chore. Okay. Mm. I play hockey, right? All right. Let me put it in that terms. I play hockey. When do men's leagues happen? At night. I'll have games at 10:30 at night and I'm dreading it. Oh my God. I got to go to hockey tonight. I got a game tonight. My wife's like, I feel so bad for you. You have a game tonight. Literally that sentence has been spoken. She feels bad. I am going. And I'm like, I know. I just want to go to bed. I'm tired. 3:00 in the morning. We're still in the parking lot. We're hanging out, guys, you know, not recently, but I'm just saying, like, once you're in that room, you just you love it, right? Well, it's the same thing. I sit down in front of the TV and I'm in my theater. It's like, I got it all set up and I'm like, all right, let's go over this first scene. And here's the thing. Do you guys ever know? Let me ask you this. Do you ever notice how my enthusiasm builds as the scenes go on? Or does like the first scene I break down sound like the last scene I break down?
I think it builds, although there's some movies where you'll say, you'll allude to, it's a powerful opener right out of the gate. Mm. They're hitting you with something special, that kind of thing.
So there are some movies, when I'm breaking down movies, there's some that I'm super excited. I can't believe that just happened and I can't wait to get to it. So that can happen. But then there's other movies that I'm really excited, or like even like U571 is a good example. I'm interested to hear how I sound on this one because I'm super excited for it, but I stamped it a while ago. So now I'm forgetting what I'm going to hear or look for when I see these scenes. And when I first start out, I'm like, all right, here we are with the opening scene. And I'll have watched the scene, obviously, a couple times before I speak about it. But I haven't ramped up. I haven't found my groove yet for the movie. And then as it's going, I'll be like, I'll hear a scene and I'll be like, oh, wow. Yeah, this is. And I also try to build it. I try to build a theme to the movie to give it an idea of why you want to watch this. And then once I can click that in, then I'm like, wow, now I'm enthused and now I'm excited for it. I think the best example was Pacific Rim. It's a demo disc from beginning to end, right? I mean it's ridiculous how good that movie is for home theater, but I was so nervous about it because I was like, I am enthused. I love watching the movie. It's like I said, it's a demo disc from beginning to end. But how do I just keep telling you the same thing just happened again? The same thing. How do I make a podcast out of that? And it wasn't until I changed up my pattern on how I do it that I was like, this is fun. And then that gave me that enthusiasm to give to you guys. So it's like, I can't manufacture it. Right? Uh-huh. It's like, I'm not an actor. I don't do that.
Well, I will say, you know, you've said it many times. It's the bright side. Yeah. So you are positive. You find the good things to to say about it. And I watched Monster Hunter. Is it Monster Hunter or Monster Hunters?
Yeah, yeah.
Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, yeah.
After hearing your take on it, and that was a movie that I couldn't sit through. I just couldn't. I couldn't turn off my brain and say, just enjoy the surround sound.
Right.
Forget about the plot. But I don't like it when the movie seems to be just so formulaic that mm-hmm. they have nothing to show but the exposition of the tech behind it. And
right.
the actual story, there's nothing there. And, you know, that movie in particular has these alien spiders, yep. which I hate it. Anytime there's like aliens that look like that, you know, they just did it because it's the cheapest CGI to just make thousands of these angular beings that they could just flood the scene with.
Yeah.
And so that's one that I was not able to sit through that whole, movie. But I wanted to because you were so excited about the
right.
the exposition of surround.
Yeah. I honestly agree with you. The story in it, it's not my cup of tea. But that home theater part of it, you're right. It is. Another thing. That's why it's called The Bright Side. That's why I like the double meaning of that. It's like, it's the bright side of the movie. Like, hey, I could talk positive about pretty much anything. But at the same time, we're also, AV Rant is, I'm not saying AV Rant's the dark side because of Tom. I'm saying they're literally behind the scene, right? They're telling you how to get that yes. gear going. Let's go behind the rack, the dark side. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about sitting in front of your TV, and that's what I like, the double meaning. That's how I came up with
yes,
the name.
Yeah,
and we're sitting cool. in front of the TV with the light coming at us. And that's the bright side. So that's what I wanted to do. Let's talk about after you've taken care of everything on the dark side. Now everything's running. Let's get the bright side going and talk about what happened in the room. Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I liked that idea, but I agree with you. And if you notice, and a lot of times in my movies, my reviews, very rarely do I talk about the movie itself.
Yes.
Right. Yep. Yep. Unless it had unless it actually hit me hard. And I'm like, I found like, what was, Saving Private Ryan, of course. The opening scene of that, which that's all I broke down was the opening yeah. scene of that. But that was a hard one to break down. That was super emotional for me. It just even going through it and watching those scenes over and over, and even talking at the beginning of that and just being like, how do I talk positive about something that's so emotional? And I wasn't thinking of myself. I was thinking of people like the people that went through this, the people that experienced mm-hmm. this, and they have a difficult time watching that scene. And I felt it was difficult. Like, how do I talk? We're using this as entertainment, you know? And it's like, so it was a fine line for me to do that and talk positively and talk enthusiastically, I should say, about like, this was great. But it's at the same time, you're like, no, this was real, people. And it's like, people went, I remember when the movie came out and, veterans saying that were there that would they're like, I can't watch it. It's too realistic, which is they're using it as publicity for the movie on go see this because it's, and that's human nature. We want to experience what the horrors of other people. And you know, it's the, you know, train wreck thing. It's like, you're like, oh, it's a train wreck. You want to see that. That's horrible, you know, and I'm not saying it's horrible that we do it. I'm saying that's a horrible experience, but for some reason it's human nature that we find that entertaining. And that was a difficult one for me to like break down review wise, be like, everybody, this is great, but it's not, you know, so, but yes, it's comments from, from you guys, from all of the support that I get. That's why I thank everybody every week. I'm like, it's like, I'm like, if I didn't have my podcast, I would still be doing all this. I'd just still be doing it by myself and just sitting there going, well, okay. And that, and I do that every day. I watch all these different scenes, and early on in my podcast, that's what I did. It's like, I hadn't found my groove on how I'm doing things now and breaking down a whole movie scene by scene. I was doing, I didn't know what to do. So, it's been an evolution. So
but
and who knew we'd be sitting here like this? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So much fun. you got anything else?
I know there's a lot of bullet points, but I think we're over 2 hours, right?
Yes. 220. Mm-hmm. 220.
Oh, I mean, I'm fine if you want to leave something in the tank for
we got future. Plenty more in the tank. I like this one here. Your AVS forum is like Twitter. It is what you make it, which we were talking about, and you went to people's houses, but what I make of AVS forum, and I love AVS. I love AVS forum, but I find it's entertainment. I get their emails every morning on what's going on. And you click on these. it's filled with so much like bad advice. I saw a guy once asked about his subwoofer, why he wasn't getting. Let me ask you, I'll ask you the question. He's like, I'm watching. He gave us dimensions of his room. Now don't say anything until after I tell you the entire, his question. He's like, I'm watching Godzilla and I want to feel the thump of when Godzilla takes a step. Like I felt in the theater. I want to feel that pounding in my chest. He's like, I'm running this subwoofer in my room. And here's the dimensions of my room. What do I need to do to get that feel? And the dimensions of my room are 12 by 18. But it only has three walls, but the area that I'm sitting in is 12 by 18, but it's open to the rest of the house. How can I get that? What is your answer to that, Kevin?
Three more subwoofers. as a start, because you've got to pressurize the entire space, right? Correct. So he's thinking, well, if I put it near me, that's how all the other speakers work. So that should be sufficient. But
by the way, his name had newbie in it. So he's a new guy to this, and he's trying to figure it out. So not a single person in the entire thread, and I'm cracking up all the way down. Get a mini DSP. Do this. Do that. Buy this bigger sub. Buy two subs. Do this. Not a single person explained you need a wall, because I think there was one guy that said I think he actually did, if I remember right. Maybe he did have two subs. And one person's advice was place the sub like where a wall would be, facing in. That one cracked me up, because I'm like, people think like if you put the sub on the edge facing in, that's the imaginary wall. Because they think like the sound wave is like it's supposed to just hit you like a high frequency, right? Like it comes at you and it's not like what bass. Not a single person in that entire thread said anything about pressurization of your whole house, or that you need another wall. There's no such thing as an imaginary wall when it comes to sound. Not a single person. And it's like, it's stuff like that, that it's like most of the people on there, I find on those forums, they just want to tell you about their gear, right? It's like, their advice is always based on, well, this is what I run, so you should use that too. And then I'm not saying they're trying to sell anything, but it's like, this is what I run, so you should do that too. And it's like, that's not exactly good advice. It's like the guy's like, well, I got this. How do I make this better?
And we're not helping anybody when you're so right when you say what a minority we are who actually get surround receivers and put speakers around the room. Because if you want to be depressed about home theater, I know I keep talking about Best Buy. Go to BestBuy.com, go to Amazon.com, and look at the user uploaded photos of the TVs, and you'll see these rooms that are just stark white, nothing in the room except a TV and wires dangling down to a sound bar if you're lucky. And this is how these people are experiencing their movies.
Yeah.
And Tom is so right when he says your room is the most important component of your of your system. And I previously had a McMansion, huge space that I had a ton of speakers in there, but again, the subwoofers couldn't keep up with the, I had two 15 inch subs, and it was never going to be satisfying. And because I didn't know about room treatments, this is another thing where I didn't know the science behind it, but I knew, even though I had good equipment, the louder I turned it up, the more it sounded like it was shouting at me.
Right.
You know, it became more shrill because it's echoing louder and louder and smearing the sound. So when we bought this house, literally one of the criteria, just like some people, they want to have three bedrooms. I had to have a room that I'd be able to seal off and have a dedicated home theater, because I've tried, you know, I had a media room where I was like, oh, I can justify spending tons of money if we're going to be in there every day. It's up in the main floor of the house, and so people were always using it. Well, I had that. And I'd get annoyed when somebody's making a sandwich while I'm trying to have a quiet movie in the main floor. So this theater, I had no compromises. I set it up. I had to build the wall because it was an open area on one side. I've got exterior steel doors with seals for my two entrances. I've got three layers of insulation on my drop ceiling. I've got three layers of Berber carpet knocking down echoes on all the walls. I've got bass traps floor to ceiling. I've got a subwoofer, an 18-inch sub in each of the four corners. I made this room exactly what I wanted, but I done it in three other houses. So I knew what didn't work, and I knew what I was getting into. But these people today, what I'm seeing at these websites, I'm scared because they don't know where to go to learn this stuff. And I'm afraid they'll never take that first step. Like when I was growing up, everybody got a stereo receiver, but now with Bluetooth, I see an entire generation of people who are like, why do I want to get a system that has to stay right there? It's plugged in. I got a Bluetooth speaker. I got headphones. I can go anywhere I want. And that's how they judge everything is the portability. And does it mate up with my phone?
Right. And that's their life. Their life's on the go. Everything's on the go. Right. And it's, it's funny. Listening to you about your theater and your system, it reminds, I've had this thought in my head, since, Kaleidoscape partnered with Keith Yates Design. And so if you've never heard of Keith Yates, he basically designs home theater. So I started doing my research on who he was and his company. And it's, Keith Yates Design, KYD. And basically what I've come up with, my analogy is they build like the Ferraris of home theater. okay, hundreds of thousands of dollars for these home theaters. And they break down to the, you know, like, infinitesimal details of soundproofing, of light output, of to get you the perfect home theater for in a space, okay? Hmm. And, like, only use the finest leathers on their materials. Only use, I mean, every single detail. This is, like I said, they build, like, the Ferrari of, like, Ferraris are hand-built. So it's, these are, like, hand-built home theaters. Perfectly specced out. And, like, and nothing extra. Like, if you, I mean, it's extravagant, but it's, like, this is what you need for amplification to get the right sound in this space. And it's like, they build big ones, they'll build little ones, whatever, but it's going to be perfectly specced out. So if they're building like the Ferrari, and that's the company, they're super expensive. This is what they do. They come out and do that. We are the Fast and the Furious guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And yep. I mean that in every sense of the word, of like, as a compliment to both Keith and his company and us and what we do. Because if you go to the Fast and the Furious movie and you have that scene when they pulled up along and the guy comes up and he goes, Ferrari, and he wants to drag race with him. That is a beautiful car. That is an amazing vehicle. It's an amazing piece of technology. We can come damn close and maybe even beat some of that stuff with what we do and like what you did in your theater. I would put like an experience in your theater up against a Keith Yates theater all day long, right? Because of your knowledge, because of, and now you did exactly what his company did, right? They learned through trial, through error, through years of experience. What's the first thing somebody asks you when you go for a job interview for anything? What's your experience? How much have you done with it? Like, what is yours? What if you go to a Keith Yates, anything, pull up a YouTube video with Keith Yates in it and they ask him who he is, what's the first thing they're going to tell you? Well, I've been into home theater for 20 years and I've been doing, they're going to tell you your long, their history.
Yeah,
that's what you have. That's what your theater was based on. So for all intents and purposes, you have a Keith Yates design. you have a Kevin Anderson design, and that's all based on that experience. And I'd put that up against the Keith Yates all day long. He might have better stuff, he might have better tech, but your room design and everything that you were just describing, I couldn't help but think, I'm like, that's exactly what they do. And that's great for people that can afford a guy to do that. But your theater's probably, I gotta say, just as good. And it definitely is just as good to you.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what's cool. It's like, we can do this stuff. And this, you know, there's people that just want to pay the money and get it, and Keith can do it, I guess. But that's pretty cool. That's awesome. That's all, yeah. All that. What did you say? Rugs? Did you say you got rugs hanging?
What kind No. When we moved into the house, this house is from the 70s, and they still had original carpet, some, you know, just dated carpet.
Okay.
But we pulled up several rooms worth of carpet, and I sliced it into 4 foot long or 4 foot wide strips.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just nailed it to the wall. You know, it's right. out from the wall a little bit. It's got a tiny little bit of air gap behind it just to give it more depth. You know, another trick that I learned from Rob, listening to them for years. And so I just put these layers of carpet up, and then I've got basically black speaker grill fabric in front of it. It's pleated, so I mean, it looks a lot like a commercial theater from that respect. And this is where, you know, Rob and Tom used to talk about you don't want to make the room too dead, because then it feels unnatural. And I never agreed with that approach, because it's only unnatural when you're sitting there doing nothing. You're in there to watch a movie. So once you hit play on the movie, then you're going to love that dead room.
Right.
And they've changed their tune, I think, a little bit in the last couple of years, because they used to push more on having some diffraction. And now they say, you know, you could put some diffraction in there. But the main thing is the insulation, the sound deadening.
Exactly.
And the reason I felt confident in as much deadening as possible is because I've heard many people say the cheapest perfect audio experience is just to get a really good pair of headphones, because then you don't have to worry about the room amplification, none of that stuff. You just, it's nothing but a speaker and your ears. And I said, what's closest to that? Having a room that's so dead that the sound comes by you once and never again?
Right.
Or is it to have these diffraction panels that randomly cause a little bit of liveliness in it? Right. So I love bringing people into the room, and, you know, engineers from work, because we have acoustic isolation rooms. It's anechoic chambers.
Yes.
We've got those at work.
Oh, wow.
And so I can bring them into my room, and as soon as I close those doors, well, even before I close the doors, I can have them. I've got double doors wide open. And as you walk into the room, you immediately feel as though somebody's put a blanket over you. And then once I close the doors, then it's sensory deprivation. And
that's
awesome. It's just awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
There was, I have 2 points on that. There was a video recently, I think most of us, I retweeted it, I think a YouTube video of a theater. Was it Youth Man? Might've been Youth Man doing a demo, you know, showing off a theater where the guy, all his gear was behind the screen. If you remember, I don't know if you watch it on YouTube.
I didn't see it.
If this sounds familiar at all. But anyways, so they started the interview process outside his theater, and he had a nice room, like outside a theater. Lot of posters. He had the digital posters and stuff, and they were talking to him, and you can hear the audio quality in their conversation while they're talking outside the theater, interviewing, talking back and forth. And you could hear that little bit of an echo in the conversation. And then they walked into the theater. Yeah. It was a noticeable difference. Like all of a sudden it felt like a more professional sound. There was no echo to their voice whatsoever. So you're like, wow, the soundproofing in that room sound control in that room must be so good. And it was a big room too, but he had a huge screen across the front. It was gorgeous theater, but just the difference in sound in that room from outside the room and inside the room, just in their conversation, which I got to imagine it's all the same microphones, right? You're just recording it with the same hardware. But the other thing is about AV Rant, and it's they're right. It's like, and you're right. And them changing their tune came from the idea that if you remember back in the 90s with Dolby Surround, what Ara and I were talking about a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, in that when the original Dolby Surround, you had mono signal in the rear of the room. And whether you had two speakers or four speakers around the room, if you had a 7-channel setup, those rear speakers were all mono, right? And the idea is you want, and I remember the specs for Dolby at the time where you wanted sound deadening in the front, so because you had discrete channels across your front. So that's where you wanted the sound deadening. But then in the rear, you wanted diffusion because you wanted that back channels were just for ambient sounds. It was just to create a sense of what's going on back there. But you didn't want to have anything discrete because nothing was discrete back there. As we've gotten into more every channel, not more, but every channel now is discrete with an Atmos system or, you know, whatever. Everything, even a 5.1 system, it's all discrete channels. So that gets into like what you're saying. If I can deaden the room, and I love that headphone comparison where you don't You don't pump sound into your headphones to, you know, it's like we have noise canceling headphones to get even more immersed, right? So I think you're right. I think that's the idea. So like these speakers, the more speakers you put in the dead room, those speakers are working off of each other. That's what we're trying to do. When we run Odyssey EQ is you're trying to balance out, Odyssey is trying to balance out the reflections and eliminate certain things so that it gives you the best, most discrete sound from each speaker. That's how the system works. That's all you're supposed to hear. So I think you're right. And I love that headphone comparison. You're right. But that is the evolution though. We were supposed to, it was required under specs to have discrete sound, dispersed sound in, you know, dispersion panels in certain places. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And you get all that from experience, Kevin.
Yep.
You've learned a lot. Wow. I've learned a lot today. I think I want to, let's see, run Odyssey EQ outside. it's crazy. So this has been awesome. We have plenty, like everybody else, we have plenty more to get to here. So I'm trying to find one that would be a fun tease.
But we haven't talked at all about my theater, like the actual speakers. I've only talked about the three front speakers.
All right, we'll save that.
I haven't talked about my 18-inch subwoofers were actually built by Elemental Designs, and I got them within 2 weeks of them disbanding. They didn't file bankruptcy, but they stopped. People 2 weeks after I got my stuff were talking about Elemental Designs took their money and never gave them speakers. They closed up shop forever, and I got these hand-built. They sent me pictures with my name on the tag as they were putting them together. So I was able to see my 18-inch subs getting built. And it was just amazing to be a part of that, the turmoil that everybody was talking about online because ED just collapsed. They tried to grow too quickly. But I was able to get a pair of their speakers, and it doesn't say Elemental Designs anywhere on them. So unless I tell you the story, nobody's going to know what brand they are or anything. But
that's funny. I have another one that I honestly, we have to do this next time. And I want to tell the list. I actually want to go through the list here, but we're not going to get into the discussion because this is going to be fun because I'm the bright side and you have a thing on here that I wanted to get to, but our flow was so good and we just kept talking. It's so much fun. All right. Here's what you wrote. Some movies with scenes I can't get past.
Yes.
And here's the movie. I know the scenes cause you put them in here. I have a pushback on every single one of them. Jack Reacher, first movie, Jack Reacher from Amazon Prime, Life, John Wick, Sucker Punch, and Jacob's Ladder. Those are six movies you have here. Six. Well, the Amazon Prime one's a show. Some of them are so funny. We're going to have fun. We're going to have fun with that.
All right, cool.
But you know what's funny is on all of them, I probably do agree with you. You're right, but it's entertainment, buddy. But we're going to have fun. Yeah. So I like when people do that. I love when people come at, like, I am positive, and that's what I do, but honestly, this is my bad. I should have opened the show with this one, but I loved your SVS picture, so that's why I was like, I don't know, I sprang to mind, but we honestly should have opened the show with this one, and we will open, next time you're on, we'll definitely open with this, just remind me of it, because I love the idea of, I'm positive, but I love negative stuff, too, so I can... There's just so much negative out there. So I want to be different. Yeah. Let's be different. Right? But I like that you can't get past it. And the same, like you said about Monster Hunter, right? Mm-hmm. And like, you're like, I just can't do it. That's fine. And that's, you know, let's do that. Come at me.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's like, you're not coming at me. It's just your opinion and my opinion, but that's fun.
Yeah, and that's really what separates you from the other podcasts that might talk about that. When you're talking about the technology, there is a right and there's a wrong, and you can debate the right and the wrong, but how can you debate creativity? Right. It's a gray area that you just have different opinions. No, which color's best? Blue, yellow?
You know, God.
You can't debate, but everybody wants to. They want to be right.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. That's one of my quote unquote pet peeves in this home theater world, is that because of the technology side, right? There is objective material. There are objective stats. But, and I've said this before on the podcast, it's all subjective. It's 100% subjective. And the example that I've used is I can hold up a red crayon and objectively that's red, right? I hold it up and I go, Kevin, what color is that? That's red. Objectively, it says it on the side of the crayon. I can read, you can read. It says red. It looks red. It's red. Is that, what's your favorite color? Blue. No, it's not. So, like, when you get into a debate, objectively, this one sounds better than that. This one puts out sound better than this one. It's more objectively, this is what goes on. Be like, yeah, but I like that one better. No, you can't. Yeah. No, what do you mean I can't? What do you mean I can't? It's like that to me. Whenever somebody talks about something being objectively better, no, you can't say that, because once you put on something, what is better to you? That's the subjective part. You can't say, you can say it performs objectively. Objectively, it performs this way. But once you put the connotation on better, that's your opinion. See what I'm saying? So, and that's what I talk about. Because I could argue all day with anybody, be like, this one's better. Okay. No, it's not. I like it better this way. To me, it's this way. And it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like, you like it better that way. I like it better this way. Whatever it is, whether it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or it's, you know, I don't know, you know, one speaker over, B&W's better than NHT. No, or yes, depends on who you are, right? So objectively, they're like what I was talking about a few weeks ago, neutral sound versus a brighter sound or something. And it's like, I continued the conversation with him later and I was like, maybe I would like a brighter sound now because I'm getting older. And as you get, but seriously, as you get older, your hearing goes, so the brighter sound might actually sound neutral. Who knows, right? So I don't know, but,
But tangents. even speakers, the better speakers you get, they are more revealing.
Right.
So if there's a deficiency in the media that you're playing,
correct,
it can sound worse because it reveals that. So yeah, that's why you've talked about, you want the signal chain, everything in it to be as good as it can be.
As it can be.
Yep.
But also know your limitations within your chain. Right.
Yeah.
Like what we were talking about with your plasma and your OLED. And it's like, well, you're feeding a plasma and an OLED something that's more conducive for the plasma. So, yeah, of course. But know your limitations in your chain. And then you can, that's if you're happy with that or you want to improve that. And that's like what we've learned over the years of our experience is like, as we've improved our chains, this is what we've seen the difference in how, so we know what to expect. Maybe on the next one or something like that. But yeah, that's what's fun. And to me, that's what's fun about debating home theater too, is because you do have an objective side. There's objective statistics, but that doesn't define what's better. Hmm. Right. Because it's all beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And it's like, it could be red, but I like blue. Yeah, but that's red. I know you are right, but I like blue. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Before we get on to anything, we're almost at 3 hours again. Look at that at 2:52. Oh my God, Kevin, amazing. And we have more to get to, as always. Kevin, thank you so much. This has been another great week. I'm all fired up. It's like when I come home from hockey. I can't stop.
So it's been awesome being able to talk to you about all this stuff. Again, I don't get to talk to anybody outside of this kind of thing. So it's awesome.
Yeah. It cracks me up. It's humbling, but it also cracks me up. It's like, DJ, you're not that good. You're just the only one. Okay, so thank you very much. Signing off from the Only One podcast. Hey, that's what happens. You do something that nobody else will do. That's how you're the best at it.
Yep.
Oh, all right, Kevin. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you all. I don't know what I'm doing. This has been so much fun. That's it. Everybody, have a great week. Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.